bitch. But just don't have to keep your game up tight.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
A federal program set up to give low-income schools access to the Internet keeps crashing. A Federal Communications Commission official told lawmakers on Thursday that the E-rate program is rife with fraud, waste, and abuse. Companies such as IBM are taking advantage of school districts' naivete, selling them elaborate Internet packages better suited to multinational industries than school libraries. In El Paso, Texas, for instance, IBM received $35 million and built an Internet system so complex that no school official could run it. IBM then set up a $27 million help center at taxpayer expense. Before long, government funds dried up, prompting IBM to shut down the entire operation.
Hit by slumping sales and a spate of recalls on popular models, Mitsubishi Motors has announced across-the-board wage cuts for everyone in the company. Executives will take 25 to 50% salary cuts this year, while those at the bottom of the corporate ladder will suffer 5% wage reductions over the next 2 years.
A meltdown in contract talks has hundreds of nuclear power plant workers in Massachusetts poised for a strike. This week, about 400 technicians with the Utility Workers Union of America in Plymouth okayed a mid-July work stoppage at the Pilgrim Station nuclear power plant, a strike that threatens to disrupt power supplies during the Democratic National Convention later that month. The union says a reduction in staffing levels has left employees dangerously overworked. Plant managers say they're ready to operate the 670-megawatt nuclear facility with the help of replacement workers.
Three Americans face arrest and deportation for a hunger strike being carried out in Taiwan to protest an ongoing lockout of American workers at a facility owned by a Taiwanese company. Continental Carbon Company, which makes chemicals used in the manufacture of tires, locked out 86 workers at its Ponca City, Oklahoma factory in 2001 after they refused to take wage and benefit reductions amounting to as much as $20,000 per worker. Last week, a delegation from the U.S. went to Taiwan to protest at Continental Carbon's parent company. They went on a hunger strike 9 days ago and since then have been put under heavy surveillance by the country's police force. They've also been threatened with deportation, but so far remain unmolested.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. A new study by Families USA finds almost 82 million Americans went without health coverage for at least 1 month during the past 2 years. Two-thirds were found to be uninsured for at least 6 months, nearly one out of every three Americans below the age of 65. Amazingly, four out of five uninsured people were employed or actively looking for work. You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find AMIBA online at amiba.net.
Excellent news, Americans. U.S. corporations say that they are no longer offshoring our middle-class jobs. It seems that they've grown afraid of the rising public anger at this self-serving fattening of their already ample bottom lines at the expense of working families. They fear that there will be a political backlash from workers, customers, Congress, and plain old American patriots. Does this mean that greed-headed CEOs are no longer shipping our manufacturing, professional, and high-tech jobs to India, Pakistan, Russia, and other low-wage centers? Of course not. It simply means that they no longer say the word offshoring. Instead, the doublespeak artists of corporate PR departments have coined new euphemisms. Rather than offshoring, they now call it remote global sourcing or right-shoring to disguise the perfidy. A new report finds that offshoring, by whatever name, is not only continuing unabated, but accelerating rapidly and expanding into new fields. If you're an architect, if you do legal work or tax preparation, if you're an editor or radiologist, say bye-bye to your professional position, for CEOs are putting these and many more on a virtual boat overseas, with about 80% of the jobs going to India, where they can get the work done for a third or less than they pay to us Americans. The report, prepared by Forrester Research, says that offshoring is increasing dramatically. Forrester's previous prediction was that the U.S. would lose 588,000 jobs to offshoring by the end of this year. Now it estimates that 830,000 will be lost, a 41% increase. Nearly half of corporations surveyed say they're either offshoring jobs now or preparing to. Well, says one offshoring specialist, so what? Quote, it's free enterprise. We're trying to make money. Yeah, and so are bank robbers. This is Jim Hightower saying the proper word for what these CEOs are doing is not offshoring, it's stealing. They're stealing America's middle class future.
I am Gunnery Sergeant Arleigh Ermey, United States Marine Corps. While our armed forces defend our freedom, their families shoulder household duties and emergencies alone. To help, the veterans of foreign wars and Vermont American brand Bits and Blades have created the Unmet Needs Program.
Rufus Forrest here, VFW Senior Administrator. Please support the Unmet Needs Program by purchasing Vermont American Bits and Blades. A portion of each purchase goes to help families.
Visit unmetneeds.com and buy Vermont American brand Bits and Blades. Thank you and Semper Fi. Hoorah!
Great news from Viagra Sildenafil Citrate. Now there's a card that can get you Viagra for free. Introducing the Value Card for Viagra. With it, every time you fill 6 eligible prescriptions, you'll get the next one completely free. There's no other Viagra, and there's no other offer like this. To get your card, ask your pharmacist or healthcare provider, or go to ViagraCard.com. See the value again and again with the Value Card for Viagra. Go to ViagraCard.com today. Offer may not be available in all areas.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
Good morning, truth seekers, defenders of the faith in democracy. As a matter of fact, good morning to all you folks who are out there on kind of the wacko right-wing fringe there listening in. I know you guys are. I know you secretly sit there in your darkened rooms just trying to pin in and see, what are they going to come out with us next? I'm Rama Schneider, sitting in for Tom Hartman. The Tom Meister is still out of town for the day, and as a matter of fact, if you need to get your fix on Tom there and you're feeling kind of left out, 8 p.m. Eastern time, he's going to be on the Majority Report. That's the Air America show, which has Janine Garofalo on it, among others. She has a co-host, and I apologize to the guy for not knowing his name. You know, it must be horrible to be a headliner with somebody as well known as Janine Garofalo, because it's like, oh yeah, the that's radio show with that really famous broad and what's his name? Anyway, all of that aside, we got some really great guests coming up for the day. As a matter of fact, coming up in just a moment here, we'll be talking about the book, The New Media Monopoly. You want to take part in the show, it's really easy to do. Just get your grubby fingers out of your nose and dial 1-866-889-8894. We'll get you live and in person on the Tom Hartman radio show with Rama Schneider sitting in for the day. And I guess let's head right over. Whoop, there we go. All right, right on over to the phone now. And let me see. When the first edition of The Media Monopoly was published in 1983, critics dismissed Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Ben H. Bagdikian's warnings about the chilling effect of corporate ownership and mass advertising on the nation's news as alarmist. Since then, the number of corporations controlling most of America's daily newspapers, magazines, radio and television stations, book publishers, and movie companies has dwindled from 50 to 10 to five. In the last 5 years, a small number of the country's largest industrial corporations have acquired more public communications power, including ownership of the news, than any private business have ever possessed, in world history. That would mean anything leading up to the here and the now. And with that said, I want to welcome Mr. Bagdikian, and I hope I'm pronouncing that right.
Here you are.
Oh, thank God. All right. How are you, sir?
I'm fine, thank you.
And if you, before we start talking about the book and some of the media issues, if you want to introduce yourself any way that you want to be, well, remembered by our large and astute audience.
Well, I think that the fact that five, possibly six corporations own and operate the media of every kind that the American public says it depends on is a danger to democracy. And when you add to that they have political power, because when you have media power, you have political power.
Right.
If the owner of a single station in Vermont went to the White House or the Congress and wanted to see one high official, he'd probably talk to a secretary or to a fourth-level aide. But
yep.
If you own, as do the big five, dominant positions in every medium, and you decide how all over the country, in every city of any size, that politician will be depicted. When you go there, that politician stands and salutes, because he or she knows that you have so much media power in every medium that they can decide whether that politician will be mentioned at all, will be mentioned negatively, or every speech of his or her opponent will be on the front page or the leading item in the news.
Right.
And so that's too much political power, and we're seeing more and more which side of the spectrum that politics is.
Well, may I call you Ben?
Sure, of course.
Oh, okay, Ben. One of the things Tom brings up regarding Howard Dean and his attempt for the nomination for the Democratic nomination for presidency is, and I remember this too, Howard Dean was on the Chris Matthews show. And Chris Matthews had asked him, or that's Hardball, actually. Chris Matthews had asked him, would he break up the media monopolies if he were to become president? And at which time, Howard, I forget his exact words, but the answer essentially was, sure. I would, you know, there are certainly, I'd look at monopolies, although he couldn't get pinned down to a specific name or anything. He said that there, you know, it was time to take a look at monopolies in media and look at breaking them up. And Tom asserted from that day on that Howard Dean was finished and gone for. Do you accept that as a premise?
That they should be broken up?
Well, no. I mean that they're so powerful that once Howard Dean said that, yeah, we'll break them up, that they started dumping on his candidacy on down the, you know, there was no favorable coverage of Howard Dean after that anymore. None at all. It was all about how angry he was and how he could do nothing but scream or come up with these wrong-headed ideas like getting Saddam Hussein to make us safer, you know, which everybody believes to be true now. But is this the type of power you're talking about with the media that they can make
and
break?
Well, that's one demonstration of it. That's where they will decide that a politician is opposed to them and
right.
would break them up. They don't want to be broken up. That's their power.
Right.
And so, of course, while these corporations differ and their news people may differ one from the other, there's no question that once there's an idea about a politician inside the Beltway among the TV and radio and print journalists there, they all tend to have the same outlook and opinion. And so if a politician is considered insignificant They all think it's insignificant.
Yeah.
And having been a Washington correspondent, I know how that works.
And Dennis Kucinich.
And you have to be very independent-minded to do it on your own without listening to what they're saying when they get together at the local bar.
Right. Now, I think Dennis Kucinich is a prime example of what you're talking about. That, you know, I mean, somebody could be just ignored or ridiculed as being too far out there to even be seriously considered, and that kind of left Kucinich permanently sitting off on the sidelines all through the campaign, although he had some really fantastic ideas at the minimum to put forward. Real quick, though, I want to make sure you get time, Ben, to promo the book, The New Media Monopoly, a completely revised and updated edition with 7 new chapters. Wow. That book, it got fatter from the last time. Where's the book available, and do you have a website that you want to give out?
Well, there's a Beacon publishing website, which is beacon.org.
Okay.
And there's one for my book, which is part of that, and it has a link to another website, which is benbagdikian.com, all one word, benbagdikian, benbagdikian,
.com,
and there will be a description of the book and some of the excerpts of it and what it says about these and details. But the book itself gets into this, not in any kind of grocery list, because I do list them. You know, the biggest one is Time Warner, the biggest media corporation in the world. And the second one is Rupert Murdoch's News Corporation.
Right.
Then Viacom, which used to be CBS.
Yep.
And then Bertelsmann, which is a German firm, that now puts out 82 formerly independent American book houses.
Wow, 82.
And, very powerful in all of those things. And then General Electric is catching up. That's NBC.
Right.
And so that we are now pretty much dependent, most Americans are dependent, on these 5 corporations for everything they see, hear, go to see at the movies, read in their magazines, look and see in their newspapers, when they turn on the radio. American radio, network radio, is pretty much a right-wing propaganda, because the biggest single radio company in the country is Clear Channel.
Yep.
And they have canned music to 1,200 stations. They have only 200 employees because it's all canned.
Yep.
And a part of the canned breaks in those canned music is Rush Limbaugh. And they yep. are one big right-wing propaganda operation.
Yeah, I can't disagree with that. Ben, we're starting to line up some callers here, and I've got a whole list of questions I want to ask, but our callers, they also, you know, this is a topic near and dear to their hearts, so do you mind taking some calls?
Sure.
Okay, let's... start with Bree from Pennsylvania. Come on in, Bree. Sit down and tell us what's on your mind.
Thank you. Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you fine. Can you hear me?
Okay. Yes.
All right.
Thank you. Dr. Bagdikian, I really appreciate your book, The Media Monopoly, and I want to buy into it. The issue that I have, though, is that ownership, I don't know if you'll agree, is only one factor of perhaps 5 factors that go into the influence of media content. And so I used to work for Clear Channel, so I've worked inside the media monopoly, I guess you could say, but I've also worked for community stations. And I guess what I'm saying is my own experience is that now I feel I have more sources, not less. I'm able to listen on Sirius Satellite Radio right now to Talk Left and Tom Hartman's program. I couldn't do that a few years ago. And in addition, I listened to a webcast from a talk show host out of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. I get to listen to her via my internet webcast, and that is an independently owned radio station. In the area where I live in the Hudson Valley, there are 2 FM stations that are independently owned that
okay.
I get so much music knowledge from. So what I guess I'm saying is the majority of people in America, they like going to see an Arnold Schwarzenegger movie. They like to wear Nike sneakers and buy at McDonald's. So how is that different?
Okay, I'm going to have to hang up there on you, Bree, and let him let him answer because we're coming up on a break.
It's an ideology thing. People are happy in the matrix they live in.
Okay.
And you know, and we see some extra sources. So just,
okay,
people who want alternative sources, they're finding them.
Okay, Bree, I got to let you go. We're coming up on
a
hard break.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. And
and
Ben, can I get you to answer that question when we come back from this break?
Okay.
Rama Schneider in for Tom Hartman.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates block out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com. Or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
Pine River, Michigan, where the abandoned Velsicol plant leaks cancer-causing chemicals into the water. It's a danger neighbors will be living with for years to come. The Bush administration says polluters no longer have to pay to clean up the mess they leave behind. Taxpayers do. That means less money, fewer cleanups, and more families left at risk. Mr. President, there is a better way. Make polluters pay. Protect our kids and community.
The war they are in has been declared over by the same man who lied them into it. Their reward? Combat pay cut in half. $1.5 billion cut to their family housing. $20 billion cut to military health care. No health care for reservists.
My answer is bring them on.
Thousands wounded, hundreds dead, and no end in sight. If we support our troops, why can't Bush? Or is this what they mean when they say an army of one?
Do you want to find out what the invasion of Iraq was really about? Read the new illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. Once you've read We the People, you'll understand why conservatives are trying to bankrupt government and how perpetual war is used as a political strategy in the United States. You'll learn how our votes are in danger and what we must do about it. You'll discover why the Alien and Sedition Acts of 1798 matter today. Populist watchdog and national radio commentator Jim Hightower had this to say about We the People.
Not only does this book tell you what's really going on, but it even draws you a picture of it. Read, learn, and act.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. A compelling story of how a government by and for the people has been replaced by corporate domination. Fully illustrated by Neil Cohn, We the People issues a call to action in a most entertaining way. Available in bookstores everywhere.
fearlessly exploring the truth of the day. Here's Tom Hartman.
Why me, George? What have I ever done to deserve even one?
All right, welcome back to the Tom Hartman Radio Show, where we frequently ask the question, why me, George? And you want to take part in the conversation, easy to do, 1-866-889-8894. Rama Schneider sitting in for the Tom Meister, who he'll be back on Monday. If you really need a fix of Tom, you can get him tonight. He's on the Majority Report, Air America. He'll be there in the first hour, 8 p.m. Eastern time anyway. So that should be just cool. Dave, I want you to hold on through the bottom of the break because I know you're waiting on the line there. You'll be the next caller we're going to take. Ben, we're talking to Ben Bagdikian. He's the author of The New Media Monopoly, and this is a completely revised and updated edition with seven new chapters. It revises and updates a book that originally came out in 1983. Ben, we're talking to this gentleman, Brie, from Pennsylvania, who he sees competition increasing access to variety, not restricting it. What would your comment to that be?
Well, I think it's true that the Internet has made some difference. That, for example, Howard Dean was able to mobilize most of his people through the Internet, not through the main media.
Right.
But I think you have to put yourself in the position of the average American worker. He or she may work at two jobs, three jobs a day,
yeah,
in order to make a living, and then get home at night, and they don't have the time, and many of them don't have the skill, to go through the Internet, long surfing the net to find a program,
right,
that serves their purpose, nor will they be able to do it going through their TV set, or looking for radio. They come home, they're tired, they turn on the TV set, and they're going to get one of the big five.
Yep.
And I don't blame them. You can't expect them all to be media experts. I think that there's a younger generation and some of the older generation who know how to search out the something other than the politics of the big five, but they're a minority.
Well,
the people who have the skill and have the time to do that.
Well,
I think we have to have sympathy with the average American worker who is forced to work. Most Americans work harder than any other developed population in the world.
Yeah.
And they come home and they're tired, and we can't ask them to become experts on the computer and the Internet and surfing on radio for the rare program like this one,
right,
which has a different political outfit than the big ones.
Well, Ben, what about, though, the point Brie made that, look, people actually like tuning into some of these mass-market programs. And I know, for instance, I'm guilty with the show Survivor. I enjoy watching most of Survivor. I mean, there's certain, the last show I don't care about, the one where they have their loved ones show up, I find really kind of blah, blah, but... You know, people like to gather. You know, tens of millions of people in the U.S. alone, much less the hundreds of millions around the world, like to watch the Super Bowl. Is it because of a choice that we're making, or is it because of a choice that some corporate head is making? That's,
well, it's a combination. I think that there's no question that the standard broadcasting is something. There has things in them that a lot of people like,
right,
and I don't argue with that. What I do argue with is that there's not enough choice, that you really have to... of course, people look at the standard broadcasts. I look at some of the standard broadcasts, but I don't have much choice in the kind of things I see. The reality shows imitate each other.
Yep.
One does it and makes a lot of money, so the others do it. And
yep,
my argument is that with 11,000 radio stations and thousands of TV stations, we ought to have more local things. We ought to have greater choices. You ought to have a choice of 10, 20, 30, 40 possible.
Okay, we got to stop for
kinds of programs.
Ben, we're up against a hard break. Can you stick through for some more time with us?
At last, there's a positive focus on a condition that affects millions. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. John Rady, author of User's Guide to the Brain, says this about The Edison Gene.
Once again, with tireless scholarship and a bit of poetry, Tom Hartman helps take us to the edge of knowing ourselves, our brains, and our world.
The Edison Gene, available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
A federal program set up to give low-income schools access to the Internet keeps crashing. A Federal Communications Commission official told lawmakers on Thursday that the E-rate program is rife with fraud, waste, and abuse. Companies such as IBM are taking advantage of school districts' naivete, selling them elaborate Internet packages better suited to multinational industries than school libraries. In El Paso, Texas, for instance, IBM received $35 million and built an Internet system so complex that no school official could run it. IBM then set up a $27 million help center at taxpayer expense. Before long, government funds dried up, prompting IBM to shut down the entire operation.
Hit by slumping sales and a spate of recalls on popular models, Mitsubishi Motors has announced across-the-board wage cuts for everyone in the company. Executives will take 25 to 50% salary cuts this year, while those at the bottom of the corporate ladder will suffer 5% wage reductions over the next 2 years.
A meltdown in contract talks has hundreds of nuclear power plant workers in Massachusetts poised for a strike. This week, about 400 technicians with the Utility Workers Union of America in Plymouth okayed a mid-July work stoppage at the Pilgrim Station nuclear power plant, a strike that threatens to disrupt power supplies during the Democratic National Convention later that month. The union says a reduction in staffing levels has left employees dangerously overworked. Plant managers say they're ready to operate the 670-megawatt nuclear facility with the help of replacement workers.
Three Americans face arrest and deportation for a hunger strike being carried out in Taiwan to protest an ongoing lockout of American workers at a facility owned by a Taiwanese company. Continental Carbon Company, which makes chemicals used in the manufacture of tires, locked out 86 workers at its Ponca City, Oklahoma factory in 2001 after they refused to take wage and benefit reductions amounting to as much as $20,000 per worker. Last week, a delegation from the U.S. went to Taiwan to protest at Continental Carbon's parent company. They went on a hunger strike 9 days ago and since then have been put under heavy surveillance by the country's police force. They've also been threatened with deportation, but so far remain unmolested.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. A new study by Families USA finds almost 82 million Americans went without health coverage for at least 1 month during the past 2 years. Two-thirds were found to be uninsured for at least 6 months, nearly one out of every three Americans below the age of 65. Amazingly, four out of five uninsured people were employed or actively looking for work. You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
I keep a close watch on this heart of mine. I keep my eyes wide open all the time. I keep the ends out for the tide that binds.
That's because you're mine. I toe the line. Well, all right, I walk it, I tow it, I don't know what I do. I do something like that. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Radio Show. Rama Schneider in for the Tom Meister, Tom Hartman. He's down in New York, and if you want to hear Tom, you can tune into Air America, the Majority Report, 8 p.m. Eastern Time. That'll be their first hour, and they're going to be having on Tom live and in the studio, so it should sound pretty darn cool. On the phone with us is kind enough Mr. Ben H. Bagdikian. He's the author of The New Media Monopoly. It's a completely revised and updated edition of the original of the original edition. It's got seven new chapters. And, well, I guess it's no surprising considering that it was first put out in 1983. So there's a lot of time to cover there as far as media monopolization goes. And thank you very much for joining us today, Ben. I certainly appreciate that.
Always a pleasure.
Yeah, well, it's great. And, I you know, people get busy and they, you know, it's just, and I understand that there's some profit in it for you, too. But it's still really great that people take the time out of their busy days and their busy lives to both listen to the show, participate as a caller, or to come on as a guest. It's I just think it's a wonderful thing. I guess if we could real quick here, let's just head on over to Dave from Humboldt County. How you doing, Dave?
Hey, really great, gentlemen. I think, though, it's very easy for us, the citizens, to either be programmed by a controlled media or to be overwhelmed, feeling the hopelessness about what can we do about it. I think it's fortunate there are still a few wonderful media, such as the one we're talking on right now, this program that allows for the airing of conflicting ideas. But as we lose our freedom of the media, we're going to lose just about everything that has made this country worthwhile. We will have a media that can be controlled by greedy special corporate interests, that can plant in our White House a corrupt goon, that can pull almost any stunts they want on us. And the media will not touch it. The media doesn't, you know, like, to me it's now altogether apparent that 9/11 was a massive hoax perpetrated against the citizens of this country to justify their behavior after it. The media won't touch that. Is there something that average citizens can do to try to save what is almost lost for us here?
Ben?
I think that what the private citizen can do is to work for, on the next coming election, getting as many people as possible to register to vote. Tell them to insist that Michael Moore's Fahrenheit 9/11 be shown in their local theater. Tell their local theater owners they want to see it, and they're not going to watch any other show until they do that, because they've all turned against him because they say it'll hurt President Bush.
I understand.
And I think they have to remember that it's got to be done at the ballot box. So in the checkout counters, ask people if they're registered to vote. On election day, get the people who haven't voted before to vote. Take them to the polling places in their cars and let them decide for themselves. But let them know what the issues are. And don't take for granted that it's going to be like past elections. Mr. Bush is weakening by the week.
Right.
And that there are 22 million women who have never registered or voted before.
Right.
Get them to do it. And so I think that there are things one can do in a very practical way.
Yeah.
And the other is to find those things on the radio, on television, and in books that tell them the real story of what's happening in corporate America.
Okay,
Thank
Dave.
You so very much for doing just that.
All right. Okay, well, Dave, we got more callers coming in here in a minute, so I'm going to let you go, all right?
Thank you so much for what you've done. You know, our whole county of Humboldt here, none of them's willing to air on that 9/11, and we're all calling every theater to put the heat on them.
Yeah, well, you guys go. You did good out in Humboldt County once already, so
yeah.
Take a breather.
Don't worry about Humboldt County.
Okay. Bye-bye, Dave.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Ben, let me ask you here. When we say the media, and I know I say the media, the term, those two words, the media, and I want to put those in quotes for the next couple sentences, I know what I mean when I say the media. What do you mean when you say the media?
Well, you know, I hate the word media, oddly enough, because it can mean anything from the kind of oil that Cezanne put on his canvas
right,
to Clear Channel's billboard. And what I mean by it are the newspapers, magazines, books, radio, television, movies that we were depend upon for our news and our entertainment. That the
right.
majority of Americans depend upon. That's what I mean by the media.
Right. Yeah.
And that the fact that these have become monopolies. Where 30 years, 20 years ago, the people who controlled all these things, who are still a select bunch, were 50 that could fit in a small ballroom. Today, the people who control all of these things
sit
in a generous-sized phone booth.
Yeah, they can sit down and have breakfast together. One of the things that I discovered working in radio stations here in central Vermont, which is where Tom broadcasts his show from, in the area of news feeds, you know, top of the hour. Here, Tom used the Workers Independent News Service, which presents totally different news from what you're going to hear on the others. It's very labor-oriented type news. But I know we used to, when I was reading the news live, I would read cut and paste APP stuff. And if whatever we played at the top of the hour, the feed that came in, or CBS, ABC, I don't know who did our news, I can't remember now, but it was the exact same news that everybody else was playing. The AP stuff that I read, I could turn on the Channel 3 television news that evening and watch them read the word for word the exact same stories. Is that part of the media monopolization, too, this whole process of the coalescing of where the media itself gets its information from?
Well, I think most of these big media programs, news programs, saying approximately the same thing. What they do show is that they have an orientation that does not reflect the desires of the American public. For example, they have mostly central right news, even in the big broadcast networks, whereas when all of the surveys show that the American public is much more distributed along the political spectrum. There are many more people who are in the middle of the road, who are to the left, who are progressives,
right,
than these, than you would see reflected in the standard programming.
Absolutely.
And so we are missing something, and what you have to do is to surf for programs like yours or read magazines of commentary of the progressive.
Yeah. I want to point out one thing, and it's more than a minor detail here, because the Tom Hartman radio show is broadcast through regular radio stations too. Tom has gone through a great deal of trouble he actually feeds his show up to the directly to the people that uplink to the satellites for dispersing it himself. So, I just want to put that out there just as a minor point of correction. Ben, we got the phones all lit up here, so I'm going to turn you over to the listeners for a little bit, okay?
Okay.
And I guess we're going to start with Bob from Spokane, but I want to say there's several people on here, so you guys can't stay on too long. At a certain point, I'm going to say, that's it, you got to go. And when I say that, you got to go. Okay, Bob?
I'm short anyway.
All right. Go ahead, brother.
I want to address the author that's there. This corporate-controlled media that you talk about, would you also refer to National Public Television and radio in that same bunch, because that's kind of where I get a lot of my information from.
Did you hear him, Ben?
I'm sorry, I don't get what the question
is. Well, he was asking, like, with PBS and all, are they part of this whole media conglomeration?
Oh, yes. I think the standard networks are owned by these five or six corporations, as well as a lot of other media properties.
The standard ones you turn on,
that people get on standard cable or through the air, part of the media monopoly.
But no, he's asking about like PBS, the public broadcasting stations. The PBS and the public radio.
Well, PBS has some offbeat things, a few offbeat, but not far off the conventional scale, because they depend upon appropriations. Part of their money comes from the federal government.
Right.
Part of it comes from state government. And if they offend the politicians, they get their appropriations cut.
Right. Okay.
So that they are limited, and as the years go by, they've had to become softer and softer. More entertainment, less news and documents.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ben. Appreciate the phone call. And then we'll head over to Armin from Florida. Hey, Armin, how you doing? Harmon, didn't I push no? I'm not. I'm with Ken from Michigan. I'm sorry. Ken, how you doing?
Oh, I'm doing pretty good today.
Yeah, I'm not. I meant to get Armin. I got you, but you're just as good as he is. Go ahead, Ken.
Okay, I just want to make a comment. My plant, we have about five families who have members over in Iraq, and we've had one death last fall, and this latest round of attacks on the military base over there. We had one of our members' son was severely wounded, and they don't expect him to make it. What I wanted to comment on was the fact that there's nothing on the news media about the heroic number of wounded that are happening every day. You know, they say, well, so many were killed, but they don't say how many are wounded. Now, how many is terrible wounds, or how many are wounded superficially where they can go back to duty? But the number from the people that are, because I'm a 24-year veteran, I have contacts through the military. The
right.
Number seems to be rising tremendously with the number of wounded we have, and nothing is said on the news media. Why? Is it a blackout or what?
Bob? Ben, I mean,
yep. So what was the question?
Well, it was the question, and he's correct for the most part here, I believe, from what I've read, that the media reports fairly religiously, so to speak, the numbers of dead in Iraq, but they very rarely address the wounded.
That was one of the disgraces of the major media, is that they would not, because President Bush doesn't want to be associated with dead soldiers coming back, that he himself would not greet them, as every other president has.
Right.
So these caskets would come home. He wasn't there. When finally someone published pictures of all of the Americans who had been killed in Iraq, two of the chains said they would not show them, and they said specifically because it would hurt President Bush.
Really?
So that tells you not only what power they have, but also what politics they have.
So what about the non-reporting of the wounded? I mean, depending on who you go to resources, I've seen, and Ken, maybe you can help me out on this, I've seen 3,000 to 5,000. And Ken, do you have any different numbers there?
No, those numbers are fairly readily available.
Well,
we aren't sure
that
how many civilians in Iraq
last,
have been killed, but at least
days was about,
in the tens of thousands.
7,000.
So, okay. I'm sorry, you guys were both talking there, but Ken was saying that the numbers he's come across is about 7,000.
You mean 7,000 American soldiers?
Right. That's the numbers he's come across. And I think the numbers vary. But why don't, I mean, they don't really get reported. I think Ken's right on this. And I agree that the numbers, it's once again a situation like you were explaining before, isn't it, Ben? If you know where to look and you have the time and the expertise to search around the internet, you can find the number, but if you're just sitting at home reading the papers, you're just home from a busy day like you described earlier, Joe and Jane Blow, they're tired, the kids are screaming, dinner's got to get done, the laundry needs to be done, and they pick up the local newspaper. Very rarely, unless it's very local coverage, do you see any mention of wounded.
No, I think there have been numbers on casualties of all kinds, wounded and killed, that are available in the standard media. The Times has done it. The Lair Hour has had it fairly regularly. So I don't think that's so much a secret as what are the kinds of damage that have been done. It took months before the scandal of torture in the prisons that were being committed by American contractors and troops. The International Red Cross reported that months before. The media did not report prominently what the International Red Cross had reported months earlier.
Right.
And only after someone took some photographs and videotapes and gave them to the media And that got out on 60 Minutes.
Yep.
Did the rest of the media then begin to report it? Mm-hmm. So, yes, there's been a reluctance to report things that would be very damaging to Bush.
Okay, Ken, I want to thank you very much for your phone call. I'm going to let you go now.
Okay, you're very welcome. Thank you, Tom.
You have a great day, sir.
I will do that. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
I get Armin, you hang on the line there. I will get to you when we come back from the break. Ben, we're coming to a point where I'm going to say thank you and let you get on with your busy day. I certainly appreciate the time and effort you've put into sitting around and talking to the people today. And we've been talking to Ben Bagdikian, author of The New Media Monopoly, and it's a completely new revised edition. And Ben, thank you, and you have a great day.
Well, thank you, and it was a pleasure talking to you.
Do you want to own a computer? Is your credit less than perfect? If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, then you are already approved for a brand new IBM, Dell, eMachine, or other name brand computer guaranteed. You heard right. Bad credit? No credit? No problem. There is no credit check, so you will not be turned down. If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, you are approved for your brand new name brand computer. Just call 800-588-0596. Freedom Frog Funding says you are approved. So give us a call today at 800-588-0596 to have your brand new computer shipped right to you. And if you act now, we'll add a $200 upgrade and a one-year warranty for free. You heard right. We will upgrade your computer and throw in a warranty absolutely free. So don't wait. Let Freedom Frog Funding send you the computer of your dreams today. Call 800-588-0596. That number is 800-588-0596.
Hi, this is Tom Hartman. Join me this October as we explore Greece, the ancient birthplace of democracy. When the Founding Fathers were searching for the best and fairest form of government, they studied the models of Athenian democracy. We'll explore together this part of the ancient world where the ideas that today animate modern democracy were first worked out. This journey is set on the shore of the sparkling Mediterranean Sea with the sacred mountains of Crete behind us. We'll visit the ancient site of Gortian, famous for the Law Code of Gortian, large 6th century BC tablets of stone built into a wall and one of the first examples of laws ever written down and now the oldest still in existence. I'll teach workshops at the two most important sites in all of Crete, Knossos and Phaistos, plus more. At Knossos, we'll experience the main ceremonial center and the palace of King Minos. For information on how you can join us on this trip of a lifetime, visit www.tomhartman.com or call 1-800-234-TOUR. That's 1-800-234-TOUR, T-O-U-R.
Who is it?
Special delivery.
Who?
Pizza Man.
Hey, you're not the Pizza Man. You're the cable guy. Again.
Price Patrol.
No, you're not. I can see your van. You're the cable company. I'm not going to let you raise my rates again. I'm calling American Satellite to get a DirecTV system.
Presidential candidate.
Are you going to offer me over 125 digital quality channels for as little as $39.99 a month, including my local channels?
Ice Cream Man.
Yeah, like that's going to work. If I call American Satellite right now, I can get a four-room DirecTV system, including professional installation free. Can you beat that?
Pizza Man.
You already tried that. Well, that's it. I'm calling to get my DirecTV system.
Call 800-505-1546. That's 800-505-1546. For new customers only. Annual programming commitment required. Ask how you can get your first 6 months for only $29.99 a month, a $60 value. Offer ends July 17th. Call now. 800-505-1546.
The shipping industry is seeking a balance between fuel efficiency and smokestack exhaust. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. Modern ocean-going ships use big diesel engines that are designed to extract the most energy possible out of cheap kinds of fuel. But that high fuel efficiency has an unwelcome cost. These efficient engines produce a surprising amount of air-polluting exhaust. Jim Corbett is a marine policy expert at the University of Delaware. He says ships pump out a lot of particulate matter and gases such as nitrogen and sulfur oxides.
By designing very, very large engines that can operate at very high temperatures and very high pressures, they became very efficient at releasing the energy in fuel. Those same high temperatures and pressures also help form high levels of oxides of nitrogen, also help form high levels of particulate matter. And the fact that these engines can run on a fuel that has very, very high sulfur content makes the sulfur emissions typically high.
Air pollution from ships can be aggravating for people who live near busy shipping lanes and ports where ships take on and unload cargo. But port communities can't do much to address the problem because these ships are usually subject to international law and not to local jurisdictions. Corbett says the shipping industry is working on standard policies to reduce emissions, but there's a hitch. Reducing air pollution might reduce fuel efficiency, too. Some extra energy will be needed to run exhaust treatment systems in the smokestacks. Corbett says air pollution from ships is a problem that people are taking seriously and for good reason. Global trade is expected to double within 20 years, and that's going to mean more ships burning more fuel to carry that commerce from country to country. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Whatever happened to the values of humanity? Whatever happened to the fairness and equality? Instead of spreading love, we're spreading animosity. Lack of understanding leading us away from unity. That's the reason why sometimes I'm feeling under. That's the reason why sometimes I'm feeling down. It's no wonder why sometimes I'm feeling under. Gotta keep my faith alive, love is found.
All right, welcome back, Tom Hartman Show. Rama Schneider sitting in for Tom this wonderful, glorious day. And joining us on the line now, straight from the land of sunshine and orange juice, otherwise known as Florida, where they don't count all the votes, we have Armin. How you doing, Armin?
Boy, thanks a lot.
Hey, man. Hey, aren't you one of the, you're one of the turncoats, you know? You guys.
What?
Yeah, Armin, you guys cost us the election. If it weren't for you guys, we'd have President Gore to be a boar, and we'd be all fat and happy right now, and I don't know. I've got spittle coming out of my mouth. I got to stop. What do you want to say?
I can't disagree with you.
Okay, don't do anything to yourself till you hang up. Well, what's on your mind today, Armin?
I just wanted to make a comment about Ben, the gentleman that was on his. I was one going to ask him if there was something in his book that would, in my opinion, explain the current events and the situation we're in with this, you know, censored media that, you know,
Yeah, it'd be in those seven new chapters he's got. Seriously.
Right.
It's not a real hard read. The book itself, I'm just leafing through. The reading part is almost, it's about 270 pages. And, you know, it's a pretty standard paperback book, so.
You know what the motto ought to be for the big news medias?
I have no idea.
All the news that's fixed to report. Listen, I want to say something else.
Go ahead.
What would really tell a lot about the current events, I think, is if he had it in his book that showed all the interlocking boards,
yeah,
between the cross, you know, connections of all the media and all the stock ownership of the medias and defense contractors and energy companies and oil companies and stuff. Boy, oh boy, would that just about explain everything.
Yeah, but you know, yeah, you're right. It's probably like the same 10 names recycled. Okay, Armin, I want to thank...
One thing real quick.
Real
I got
quick.
A question.
You got
10... Are you familiar with the rumor about Mexico protesting the Olympics?
Am I in the... No, I am not.
Some about that they want to get a new sport sanctioned, but the committee won't allow it because they know Mexico would dominate it. You know what the sport is?
This better not be racist, or I'm going to never let you on the phone again.
Well, I don't think it's racist.
Go ahead. You got 5 seconds. One.
Fence jumping.
Tom Hartman Show. Rama Schneider sitting in for him. That was poor taste, Armin.
Been listening to the Tom Hartman Program? Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
The founding fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back, and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide, and you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner. A federal program set up to give low-income schools access to the Internet keeps crashing. A Federal Communications Commission official told lawmakers on Thursday that the E-rate program is rife with fraud, waste, and abuse. Companies such as IBM are taking advantage of school districts' naivete, selling them elaborate Internet packages better suited to multinational industries than school libraries. In El Paso, Texas, for instance, IBM received $35 million and built an Internet system so complex that no school official could run it. IBM then set up a $27 million help center at taxpayer expense. Before long, government funds dried up, prompting IBM to shut down the entire operation.
Hit by slumping sales and a spate of recalls on popular models, Mitsubishi Motors has announced across-the-board wage cuts for everyone in the company. Executives will take 25 to 50% salary cuts this year, while those at the bottom of the corporate ladder will suffer 5% wage reductions over the next 2 years.
A meltdown in contract talks has hundreds of nuclear power plant workers in Massachusetts poised for a strike. This week, about 400 technicians with the Utility Workers Union of America in Plymouth okayed a mid-July work stoppage at the Pilgrim Station nuclear power plant, a strike that threatens to disrupt power supplies during the Democratic National Convention later that month. The union says a reduction in staffing levels has left employees dangerously overworked. Plant managers say they're ready to operate the 670-megawatt nuclear facility with the help of replacement workers.
Three Americans face arrest and deportation for a hunger strike being carried out in Taiwan to protest an ongoing lockout of American workers at a facility owned by a Taiwanese company. Continental Carbon Company, which makes chemicals used in the manufacture of tires, locked out 86 workers at its Ponca City, Oklahoma factory in 2001 after they refused to take wage and benefit reductions amounting to as much as $20,000 per worker. Last week, a delegation from the U.S. went to Taiwan to protest at Continental Carbon's parent company. They went on a hunger strike 9 days ago and since then have been put under heavy surveillance by the country's police force. They've also been threatened with deportation, but so far remain unmolested.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. A new study by Families USA finds almost 82 million Americans went without health coverage for at least 1 month during the past 2 years. Two-thirds were found to be uninsured for at least 6 months, nearly one out of every three Americans below the age of 65. Amazingly, 4 out of 5 uninsured people were employed or actively looking for work. You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
It's always good to get reassurances from high government officials on issues of great concern to the people. Take the nagging issue of U.S. corporations offshoring hundreds of thousands of well-paying high-tech jobs out of our country, the very jobs we were told would be our people's ticket into the middle class. But now, the CEOs of Dell, Microsoft, IBM, and the rest are shipping these engineering and programming jobs off to India, Russia, and other locales where they can pay a third or a fourth or even a tenth of the middle-class pay scale in the U.S. Hey, they say, America's a great place, but we're going to go where we can fatten our bottom lines. This self-serving betrayal of America's middle class has, to put it nicely, annoyed many, many Americans. This is where Colin Powell steps in. Bush's Secretary of State recently sought to reassure the people on this issue of offshoring. Unfortunately, the people he reassured were in India. On a recent trip there, he promised that the Bushites would do nothing to stop the outsourcing of U.S. high-tech jobs to India and, indeed, would oppose all congressional efforts to stop it. He even posed as an economic philosopher, declaring that, quote, outsourcing is a natural effect of the global economic system, adding adamantly that you're not going to eliminate outsourcing. Well, we're certainly not going to eliminate it if our government won't fight for our people. Oh, but Powell said, while these kinds of dislocations will take place, the Bushites plan to train the American people for new jobs. What new jobs exactly? He didn't say. He didn't have a clue. But Bush's Labor Department knows. It lists 30 job categories that will have the greatest growth between now and 2010. Number one, fast food workers. Two-thirds of their growth jobs pay less than $20,000 a year. This is Jim Hightower saying, forget high tech. Colin Powell envisions you in a hairnet.
It's difficult enough to work your way through this jungle called life every day without having to carry an 800-pound gorilla of high-interest student loans around with you. So just do what over 300,000 people have already done and call College Loan Corporation at 1-800-2-COLLEGE. College Loan Corporation will gladly give you the advice you need while helping you look into interest rates as low as 2.63%, the lowest federal rates in 40 years. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
It's the stick it where it hurts to feel well patch. Works in a hurry to feel well patch. Lasts a long time to feel well. Well patch, it brings you back to well patch.
Is pain keeping you from feeling well? Try the immediate, long-lasting pain relief of well patch. Well patch comes in a full line of pain-relieving patches that soothes your specific pain. For backache, arthritis, muscle pain, or stiff neck, put on a well patch.
Well patch, it brings you back to well patch.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome to the Tom Hartman Radio Show. I'm not Tom Hartman, no. I'm Rama Schneider sitting in for Tom, who is off taking care of personal business. And if you need to hear Tom today, if you feel this strange urge, actually, there's a whole bunch of ways. You go over to WhiteRoseSociety.org, where they do carry a full lineup of his shows. They keep recordings there, and you can listen to your last show that you really wanted to hear. Another way to do it tonight, first hour of the Majority Report on Air America. You can hear the Tom Meister alive and well and going at it so that we all know that he's just doing fine like he should be. 1-866-889-8894 if you want to take a part in the show. And joining us at this moment is, I hope it's Mr. Robert Sterling. Is this Mr. Sterling?
That is correct.
How are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing great. It's great being here.
Yeah, and well, thank you for joining us. Mr. Sterling is the author of, well, is it correct to call you author or of this book, 50 Reasons Not to Vote for Bush, or are you the compilator?
Well, actually, I did write all 50 reasons. There's some articles from other people, including Paul Krasner, who did the intro, and Greg Palast, who gives it a special piece, but
Okay. Yeah,
I am the author. I'll take credit for that.
Okay. I just wasn't sure there, because actually, having read through parts of it myself, it seems like you legitimately deserve to be called author. And now, you've been on Tom's show not too long ago, right?
No, yeah. I was just earlier this week.
Yeah, and you were going through some of the reasons that not to vote for Bush. I mean, If I remember correctly, you got through like 1, 2, and 3. I don't know if you got to Osama Gate, Liar Gate, Link Gate, Bring 'em On, Screwing Our Troops, the Iraqi Quagmire, Victory in Iraq, Shrubonomics, It's Still the Economy, Stupid, Fuzzy Math and Tax Cut Voodoo, He's Bankrupting the USA, Iran Gate. Iran Gate. Let me stop at Iran Gate there if I could, Robert. And may I call you Robert?
You can certainly call me Robert.
Okay. If you don't call me late for dinner, then. Because Enron is popping back up in the news with some wonderful tape recordings of their traders that, from everything I've heard of these tapings, seems to have confirmed beyond any shadow of a doubt that Enron was indeed screwing California royally on prices for electricity. So under 50 reasons not to vote for Bush, what do you got under Enron Gate there?
Well, I actually have another chapter, incidentally, involving Enron, another reason, Reason 38, Enron and the California Energy Swindle.
Okay, so let's start with that one, and then we'll go back to Enron Gate.
Yeah, you know, actually at the time I was working for a web magazine called Disinformation when all this was happening.
Right.
And I pretty much laid it out then what's become the conventional wisdom. And, you know, there were others as well who were pointing this out, but there really wasn't any doubt at the time that the whole energy crisis was basically a fixed swindle, that there was a few companies that had an oligopoly and they were fixing the market to, you know, create outrageous profits because of, you know, there's actually very little movement in demand when the supply changes in energy and prices can skyrocket.
Yeah. Well, they were doing fun things like buying the electricity in California, shipping it out of state where the prices weren't controlled so they could turn around, sell the exact same electrons right back to California at a really fattened rate. Isn't that right?
Yeah. And one thing that actually Greg Palast talks about in his book, The Best Democracy Money Can Buy, which astounding fact was that apparently the computers that were involved in making prices and everything in
they were made by
California, it could only do five figures, you know, five figures at the time. And at one point, all these companies simultaneously put out price offerings of $99,999. Basically, they would have done it more, except they believed that they could only do five figures. And so that tells you just that it could have been worse. But that's almost point-blank proof that this was a scam, that was a rigged game.
Yeah, and to think that this was like one of the major things that chased Governor Gray out of office and ended up with Herr Gropen, Governor Schwarzenegger out there in California.
Yeah, and not to overly defend Gray Davis, a man who, of course, wasn't sure, dealing with the criminal conspiracy, basically, wasn't sure if he wanted to deal with them or to get tough with them.
Yeah.
But, this was basically a Cheney Bush operation because the FERC just sat down its hands on the instructions of the Bush-Cheney team. And, you know, Cheney basically said at the time, oh, well, this is a problem of them just wanting too much energy and not putting enough energy plants out there.
Yeah, which actually they had some under construction at the very time to boot. We're talking to Robert Sterling, 50 Reasons Not to Vote for Bush. And actually, it's funny you say that's part of the Bush-Cheney program there to rip off California, because number 39, which comes right after Enron and the California energy swindle, is the Cheney Energy Program. And one of the things I've always been most fascinated by that, I read the report that they put out from the Cheney Energy meetings, and it spent like the first five pages or so extolling all the virtues of conservation and environmentally friendly generation of power and talked about how much wonderful things it has done. And they actually provide some really great pictures that thoroughly convinced me that conservation and environmentally friendly electricity production are excellent and work. But then they spend the rest of the report and all their political efforts on just trying to make way for coal-fired plants and bringing more oil in from Iraq and things like that. Am I missing anything there?
No, you are not. You know, it is that they basically did give lip service to these things, and then they proceeded to just say, well, oil, gas, and nuclear energy, that's pretty much it.
Yeah.
And one of the plans was to have basically one new power plant completed every week for 20 years. That was one of the plans. Of course, there's the push for the Arctic Wildlife Refuge drilling.
Yep.
And weakening environmental regulations.
Hey, by the way, actually, I think it was Benedict at Large. Yeah, reason number 50 in our chat room. If you folks really want to go hang out with some rather witty, extremely intelligent, and erudites. They got erudites coming out of their hairs, these people in the chat room there. Go to TomHartmann.com and click on chat room. You can join all these folks typing in. But Benedict at Large says reason number 50 not to vote for Bush is Ben will get really angry. But I wanted to say, Ben, that would be number 51, because actually we'll get to number 50 in a moment. But I want to go back to Enron Gate. What do you say about Enron Gate in this book?
Well, Enron Gate is basically the bankruptcy of the, I believe, seventh largest company at its peak, like less than a year before. And this is stunning, especially when you realize that they were gouging California energy market the previous year. They were getting billions of dollars. I think it was, what, $40 billion at the time?
Yeah, it was some grotesque,
outrageous number
for that.
Yet, despite doing this illegal fleecing, they were bankrupt before the end of the year. And, you know, I compare it to the Teapot Dome, which in 1921 basically destroyed the reputation of President Warren G. Harding. But, you know, if you look at the Teapot Zone, which Dome scandal, which is basically a scam where competitive bidding for some some
oil land
in Wyoming was kind of on a rigged scale. It's minor league stuff compared to Enron.
Oh, God, yeah. I mean, Ken Lay, you got to give him credit for one thing. He thought, well, I assume that he's involved, I should say. It's still allegations, but whoever made these decisions for Enron, just to keep myself legally covered here, thought big. They weren't going to pick Granny's pocket. They were going to pick the whole country's pocket, the whole world's pocket, whatever.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, one thing that is really kind of not talked about is what actually happened to all this money. And there's still some question about that. And, you know, I don't think, I suspect that officially we'll never find the answer, but it seems to be that in these offshore accounts that were being set up, Beyond the fact that they were hiding losses in offshore accounts, I'd assume that they were hiding profits as well. In fact, there is evidence of that. Now, who are on these names of these offshore accounts that were getting all these profits? That's still a good question, but curiously, one person, I want to say his name was David Baxter. He perhaps would have had some knowledge on this, and he supposedly committed suicide. Like,
oh, right, yeah.
But at the end there, yeah.
Yeah, he was, what was the, Arthur Anderson? Didn't he work for Arthur Anderson?
No, he actually worked for Enron.
Okay, but
itself.
He was an accountant.
He was the vice chairman and chief strategy officer. His name was Clifford Baxter.
Okay, yeah, I remember the story.
And he was considering to hire a bodyguard for protection at the time and supposedly feared for his life. And interestingly enough, at the same time, not actually at the same time, but 4 months later, the treasurer from El Paso, and this hasn't gotten as much coverage,
yep.
He allegedly committed suicide as well.
Did it? Yeah. Now, El Paso was involved in a lot of these California ripoff
schemes,
too.
Yeah, exactly. The other one of the, you know, big Texas companies. So you have two very suspicious deaths that happened within 4 months involved.
Let's see. You have two people who might have knowledge of a wide-ranging, multi-billion-dollar criminal enterprise, and you don't think they just commit suicide? You don't see anything suspicious there? I mean, I don't know. It could be. The one reason that I think I'm looking through this list, 1 through 50, you seem to do pretty good. But I think you miss one there at least, which I would say is just listen to him. I mean, it's George Bush. I'm not that keen on John Kerry, but George Bush has convinced me I'm going to vote for John Kerry. And
yeah.
And I mean, literally, if anybody's convinced me that Kerry's the man, it's listening to George Bush, and he just has this. I would almost call it's like a psychotic aversion to the truth. I mean, it's, well, you have it in there. Yeah, I guess you
yeah.
do.
Lie Gate. Yeah, number 19, which I guess I can say he's a dumbass.
Okay,
yeah.
That'll
they
work,
say it
too.
On That 70s Show a lot, but I can't say the full thing for reason yeah. 20. It was originally called He's a Liar.
Okay.
My publisher suggested change it. He's yeah. full of something.
Yeah. Well, I like that. Hey, Rob, can you sneak by for a couple minutes here? We got to go to a commercial break.
Would love to.
And I got a caller that wants you. Rama
Great.
Schneider in for Tom Hartman.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do they know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Do you want to own a computer? Is your credit less than perfect? If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, then you are already approved for a brand new IBM, Dell, eMachine, or other name brand computer guaranteed. You heard right. Bad credit? No credit? No problem. There is no credit check, so you will not be turned down. If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, you are approved for your brand new name brand computer. Just call 800-588-0596. Freedom Frog Funding says you are approved. So give us a call today at 800-588-0596 to have your brand new computer shipped right to you. And if you act now, we'll add a $200 upgrade and a one-year warranty for free. You heard right. We will upgrade your computer and throw in a warranty absolutely free. So don't wait. Let Freedom Frog Funding send you the computer of your dreams today. Call 800-588-0596. That number is 800-588-0596.
At last, there's a positive focus on a condition that affects millions. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD, and The Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. John Rady, author of User's Guide to the Brain, says this about The Edison Gene.
Once again, with tireless scholarship and a bit of poetry, Tom Hartman helps take us to the edge of knowing ourselves, our brains, and our world.
The Edison Gene, available in bookstores everywhere.
During the past 3 years, it's true George W. Bush has created more jobs. Unfortunately, they were created in places like China. Bush's policies have encouraged the loss of nearly 3 million jobs. He supported tax breaks to corporations that ship jobs overseas. George W. Bush is taking our country in the wrong direction. It's time to make America work for every American.
In the foreword to Tom Hartman's book, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late, renowned author Joseph Chilton Pierce writes,
"To discover brilliant, innovative, creative, and original thinking is one of life's rare privileges. To discover that such a thinker has focused on the most critical of all issues facing our species is encouraging. Because The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight is a seminal work, offering a viewpoint original yet ancient, I see our situation today in a new light. And because of the scope and depth of this work, I find it inspiring as well as disturbing. I rather exhausted superlative in praise of Tom Hartman's book, The Prophet's Way, which I rightly called the most important book I've ever read. But now I find the sequel calling for equal praise, since the issue here addresses the whole of our species, and indeed all species.
The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late by Tom Hartman, in bookstores everywhere.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
He took all the trees and put them in a tree museum. And he charged the people a dollar and a half to see them. No, 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 don't it always seem...
All right, I better turn this down before I start singing along with it. Rama Schneider sitting in for Tom Hartman. 1-866-889-8894 joining us as a guest. Mr. Robert Sterling, author of 50 Reasons Not to Vote for Bush. And, you know, I would put this as one of those books that I think people, you know, it's, I think as far as under the political books, I think it's one of those books that people should buy. But that's just one man's opinion. Let's go find a woman's opinion. Hey, Nora from Humboldt, how are you doing today, Nora?
I'm doing good. And how about yourself?
We're doing fine. What you got for Robert?
Well, Robert, I wanted to ask you on that Clifford Baxter suiciding. Didn't that happen like the day before he was going to testify?
I don't believe it was the day before. In fact, I don't think he had agreed to testify. There hadn't necessarily been a date set, but what's important to understand is he was already being set up in the media as a hero in this thing, as the the voice of conscience within the Enron team. And so the whole idea that he committed suicide because he was depressed because of it just doesn't jive with how they were trying to set this guy up.
Well, yeah, I caught in it too, the same thing on David Kelly suicided.
Right, right, exactly. The guy in
England.
The UK.
In England.
Yeah.
And, you
exactly.
know, the Hutton report, just like the 911 Commission report, just like the Warren Commission report.
Yeah, that's another very suspicious one, although I don't know as much about that. But, you know, let's put it this way. Whenever there's big money and big politics involved and there's supposedly a suicide, there's always reason to suspect that maybe... something else is going on.
Well, I think there's something else there personally is Hillary and Bill Clinton did it. I mean, they seem to have gotten the blame for everything else. Let's just throw a few more in there. Nobody will notice, right?
Yeah, well, yeah. The interesting thing is the documentary that kind of detailed all this, the right-wing documentary, the Clinton Chronicles.
Yeah.
There's this thing coming out, and this was peddled by, among others, but the chief peddler was Jerry Falwell of the... well-named moral majority. There's actually a documentary coming out this weekend that actually about, I guess it's called The Hunting of the President. And in it, Jerry Falwell actually states that he cannot stand by what is asserted in the Clinton Chronicles anymore.
Oh, well, it's about time. Mm-hmm. I'll be darned.
Yes, you know, and isn't Pat Buchanan has been speaking out about Bush, too, hasn't he?
Yes.
Yeah, he has a very curious relationship with the Bush family in general, and you know, even about 6 months ago, as late as that, recent as that, he was actually saying at the time that he believed that Bush was going to win, but he felt that everything was going to come back to haunt Bush and hurt him historically.
Yeah.
But I think maybe even that would be a bit optimistic at this point for Bush.
Well, okay. Thank you very much for the phone call, Nora.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, and you all have a good day.
Oh, you too. Bye-bye.
Bye now.
Yeah, it's interesting what she says about Pat Buchanan there from the New York Post. Is this today? I think, yeah, June 17th. Actually, that'd be yesterday, wouldn't it? Thomas Dunn, let me see. A Thomas Dunn imprint of St. Martin's Press has agreed to pay around $500,000 to Pat Buchanan for what's called an anti-W book to be called Where the Right Went Wrong. That doesn't really surprise me with Pat Buchanan. Does that with you? I mean, Pat's always been, he's been more of a protectionist and fiscal conservative, you know, a tightwad type conservative. And, you know, I guess the only point I see where him and Bush would agree on would be on their religious leanings as far as government goes, don't you think?
Yeah, although I view Buchanan more as a true believing soldier, whereas I suspect Bush is mainly an opportunist in that regard.
Okay.
But having said that, that's just impressive or surprising because Buchanan had kind of been staying out of the fray.
Bob, I got to cut you off here.
September 11th.
We're coming up on a hard break. Can you stick through one more commercial?
I certainly can.
This
sir.
Is great. Thank you. Rahm Schneider in for Tom Hartman.
A must read, The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. Ed Halliwell, a nationally recognized expert on ADD, said this about The Edison Gene.
Tom Hartman demonstrates that ADHD can be associated with creativity, high achievement, and a most successful adaptive style.
The Edison Gene, now available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner. A federal program set up to give low-income schools access to the Internet keeps crashing. A Federal Communications Commission official told lawmakers on Thursday that the E-rate program is rife with fraud, waste, and abuse. Companies such as IBM are taking advantage of school districts' naivete, selling them elaborate Internet packages better suited to multinational industries than school libraries. In El Paso, Texas, for instance, IBM received $35 million and built an Internet system so complex that no school official could run it. IBM then set up a $27 million help center at taxpayer expense. Before long, government funds dried up, prompting IBM to shut down the entire operation.
Hit by slumping sales and a spate of recalls on popular models, Mitsubishi Motors has announced across-the-board wage cuts for everyone in the company. Executives will take 25 to 50% salary cuts this year, while those at the bottom of the corporate ladder will suffer 5% wage reductions over the next 2 years.
A meltdown in contract talks has hundreds of nuclear power plant workers in Massachusetts poised for a strike. This week, about 400 technicians with the Utility Workers Union of America in Plymouth okayed a mid-July work stoppage at the Pilgrim Station nuclear power plant, a strike that threatens to disrupt power supplies during the Democratic National Convention later that month. The union says a reduction in staffing levels has left employees dangerously overworked. Plant managers say they're ready to operate the 670-megawatt nuclear facility with the help of replacement workers.
Three Americans face arrest and deportation for a hunger strike being carried out in Taiwan to protest an ongoing lockout of American workers at a facility owned by a Taiwanese company. Continental Carbon Company, which makes chemicals used in the manufacture of tires, locked out 86 workers at its Ponca City, Oklahoma factory in 2001 after they refused to take wage and benefit reductions amounting to as much as $20,000 per worker. Last week, a delegation from the U.S. went to Taiwan to protest at Continental Carbon's parent company. They went on a hunger strike 9 days ago and since then have been put under heavy surveillance by the country's police force. They've also been threatened with deportation, but so far remain unmolested.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. A new study by Families USA finds almost 82 million Americans went without health coverage for at least 1 month during the past 2 years. Two-thirds were found to be uninsured for at least 6 months, nearly one out of every three Americans below the age of 65. Amazingly, 4 out of 5 uninsured people were employed or actively looking for work. You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
We'll be right back.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Come together right now over me.
Oh, no, the mic's on. Yo, come together. There you go. Whatever happened to the group, the Beatles? Why, they broke up and started dying, you idiot. But of course they did. Rama Schneider, sitting in for Tom Hartman on the Tom Hartman Radio Show. 1-866-889-8894 is the way to, be a caller. What the heck? Why not? Tom Hartman is off taking care of personal business. But if you want to hear him tonight, and I know I'm going to tune in because it's early, it's before my bedtime, Tom's going to be on the Majority Report. That's the one with Janine Garofalo on Air America, and he'll be on during the first hour, which is, I guess, the 8 p.m. Eastern time slot. And, you know, I should look up the guy's name, because Janine Garofalo co-hosts the show, but unfortunately she's grabbed all the headlines in my little pea brain, and I don't know who the other is. But I do know joining us on the phone here is Mr. Robert Sterling, and he's the author of 50 Reasons Not to Vote for Bush. And do you mind staying on to play co-host for another 10 or 15 minutes, Bob?
Definitely, I'd be honored to.
Oh, that's great. That's a lot of fun. Let me, we got a, Harry from Michigan's on the line. And Harry, I'll get to you in just a moment, but I want to ask you a question here, Bob. And look, I think your book is excellent, and I think actually what it does is an excellent idea. And my question isn't meant to detract from this, but there's only so much that one can accomplish from rejecting the status quo or being angry. There's got to be a point where people turn around and say, hey, you know, A is bad, but look, here, I give you B, which is better. I mean, for instance, with the energy policies in the country, it's not just enough to sit there and say that the Bush-Cheney energy policies are just so heavily weighted to oil wars and gouging out mountains to collect more coal. We've got to also be able to turn around and say, look, here are the alternatives. Here are the solar alternatives. Here are the geothermal alternatives. Here are the tidal alternatives, et cetera. How do we, from your perspective as an author, how do we go about transferring our dislikes into expressing what our likes are?
Well, I would totally agree with you. And in fact, I just want to read something from the preface that I wrote. I said, the alternatives to Bush are not inspiring, but despair and indifference are a trap. Lest the election be close enough to steal again, make sure that your friends go to the polls, if only out of anger. Given this book, which, if it succeeds, it conveys the essence of the Bush White House, has something to anger everyone.
Right. Yeah.
And, the point is that, I include this line. The coming election is a chance for the beginning of reform of American politics, the first step of which is the end of Bush's reign.
Well, that I agree, and I don't think, you know, I'm a non-practicing drunk myself, and I know I didn't become non-practicing until I stopped drinking. So I had to acknowledge the bad things, the alcoholism. I had to acknowledge the fact that I was at the point I couldn't keep jobs. I believe I was about a week from living in the gutter at the time I stopped drinking, and I say that without exaggeration. And without acknowledging that, I never would have gotten on to the really wonderful life I have now. I mean, I'm not wealthy, but I've got a great family. We live in a fantastic location. I'm very happy with the things that I'm able to do. I mean, my God, I'm able to sit on national radio and play radio talk show host.
Yeah. I mean, you bring up some great points there. I mean, the thing is that I do not think that George W. Bush is the alpha beginning all of what is wrong with American politics, because
right.
He certainly is currently the omega. He is the end result of everything which is wrong with our politics. And say what you will about John Kerry, and say what you will about the Democratic Party, and a lot can be said negatively, rightfully, but the problem with them is what they are not. The problem with Bush and his cronies is what they are.
Yes. Yeah, you're right. Okay, well, on that note here, let's bring in Harry from Michigan. How you doing, Harry?
Oh,
what can we do?
I'm an old-time Democrat, and I'm very worried about Kerry giving the presidency back to George Bush. George Bush is trying to give it to Kerry, and Kerry's trying to give it to Bush. And it's coming, and this time they have a campaign. And I would start by firing the campaign manager. She's a nice old lady, but she's got no business running a Democratic campaign.
Is that Jeanine Shaheen from Hampshire?
What?
Is his campaign manager? That's not Jean Shaheen, is it?
No. No, it's an old lady from Massachusetts.
Oh, okay. Any comment?
I tried her once, and I was appalled. She's got no business being there.
So, well, to be fair, I'm sorry.
What?
Okay, but
I'll let him go.
Okay, Harry?
Yeah, but just think, it only takes one reason for knocking Bush out of there. If he gets elected, you're guaranteed a right-wing Supreme Court for the next 30 years.
Yeah.
Next 30 years. They'll knock out affirmative action. They'll knock out...
Yeah. Abortion.
They'll knock out every decent program the Democrats ever put in. And I'm scared that Bush is going to win it again.
All right. Great points, Harry. And I want to thank you for your phone call.
Yeah. Okay. You know, that's actually reason number 24 of the Supreme Court.
Right.
There's really three people right now, William H. Rehnquist, Sandra Day O'Connor, and both of them pretty much look ready to have a fork put in them. The only reason I think they haven't retired is that they realize that there would be way, way too much controversy over their replacement because of the 2000 decision.
Right.
And John Paul Stevens, although there isn't any plans for him to officially retire, he was born in 1920. So, you know, that's makes him 84 right now.
So the young ones then are Scalia and Thomas, aren't they?
Yeah, and actually,
that's a horrible
thought.
Let
me think.
I think they're the
Souter.
Souter? Well, yeah. But and he's okay though. I don't mind Souter.
Well, I think the most important thing to realize is that on all that is O'Connor is kind of the conservative wing, or moderately conservative, which really is conservative. Rehnquist is part of the hard right trinity, and Stevens is part of the moderately liberal wing of the court.
Yeah.
So all three of these people can radically change the makeup of the Supreme Court.
Yeah, well, you
so
can
that is a huge issue that really hasn't gotten enough focus yet.
And I think you can guarantee that if Rehnquist retires, we'll see Scalia as it'll either be Scalia or Thomas as Chief Justice on the Supreme Court.
Well, it'd have to be Scalia. I mean, I think, you know, even people agree with him know that Thomas is basically a slug up there.
Okay, let's see. Well, I'm kind of running out of questions here. What did you have anything that you wanted to specifically get to?
Well, first of all, let me just repeat the name of my book, 50
okay.
Reasons Not to Vote for Bush. You can find it at feralhouse.com.
Right.
feralhouse.com. That's and at my website, conformist.com. That's conformist with a K, not a C. You can also find it at Amazon. And having said that, you know, this is a book that I really do care about deeply, and that, you know, even though I plan to make money off it and don't apologize, it's something that I really believe in. And I hope in any way, if I help influence this election for the better, I've done my good deed.
Well, I think you do a couple things. One, of course, the big thing is you bring out the reality as opposed to what constantly gets repeated out of the White House, especially. And and I think it's so important on some of these issues. And although the title itself, 50 Reasons Not to Vote for Bush, sounds like an all negative all the way through, but when you go through, you find examples of what the good and the bad was, and why it is that we can't be dealing with Mr. Bush anymore. So I congratulate you on that. It's a good book. I haven't read it all the way through, but from what I've read, I've enjoyed it, and it's a little more than half of it all told.
Thank you. Yeah, I try to also balance the information with a lot of humor, and I think I get that balance pretty well.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that. Well, one more question before I'm looking at your name, Robert Sterling. Now, that comes awful close to Rod Sterling. Are you any connection to the Rod Sterling of, what was that, the Twilight Zone?
No, and I've heard that all my life.
All right.
He's actually Sterling, by the way, without the T.
Well,
but
not in my language.
Yeah.
Is it really?
Yeah,
I always thought it was Sterling for him, too. I'll be darned.
Go figure.
Yeah, go figure. Well, you are now his close relative. All right, 50 Reasons Not to Vote for Me, too. Thank you very much, Robert Sterling, 50 Reasons Not to Vote for Bush, with contributions from Paul Krasner, Greg Pallas, Lydia Lunch, Sam Smith, Matt Tybee.
Tybee?
Robbie?
Tybee.
Okay, it's spelled T-A-I-B-B-I.
Yeah, I know.
Robbie Connell and Brian Paisley. All right. Well, thank you very much, Bob. I appreciate your time.
It's a pleasure.
And you have a great day.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. All right. You know, like that, actually, you buy the book and it just gives you a starting. It's kind of like you buy the book and it gives you a foundation, because you can probably sit down on a good afternoon and come up with like several hundred thousand reasons not to vote for Bush. I know I get home, when I get home tonight, today, this afternoon, whatever time these slave drivers will let me out of the studio, I'm going to go home and look at one very, very, very important reason to vote for a change in the direction of our country, to vote for a change in who's holding the presidency, to vote for a change in the policies that will be pursued. And that's going to be my daughter. Because I'll tell you, if for nothing else, the Bush administration has done worse than anybody, worse than Ronald Reagan. Well, George Bush the first, H.W. actually, and Bill Clinton actually had enough common sense to raise taxes to help get out of the deficit spending cycle. But George Bush has dumped an extra like $7,000 worth of debt on every man, woman, and child in the U.S. And there is no intention on having us pay back any of that debt in our lifetimes. You know, my daughter, her kids, you know, their kids, they're going to be paying back on all of this debt. There's a good reason to vote for a change. And that's what I look at these 50 reasons not to vote for Bush is, actually, it's 50 reasons to vote for a change. It's 50 reasons to take positive outgoing action so that we don't have to keep putting up with this sort of stuff. And, you know, when Tom calls himself the radical middle, and I believe it's a term that we should all apply, because if you look, if you believe in a good solid public education system, if you believe in health care availability, and I mean health, not just medical care, but health care availability for every man, woman, and child in the United States is a birthright. If you believe that we not only deserve, but we can demand a clean source of food, water, air, and shelter, also known as our physical environment. You know, these things all put you right square in the radical middle. This is what progressiveness is all about. This is what progressives go to deal with, you know. This is the progressive political culture, is to, let's take these human problems. You can't just drop a bomb on every issue, you know. There's just no way. You just can't drop a bomb on every issue. So, all right. I have no idea who's on the phone now. I hope you want it to be on the air. Who's this?
It's Michael in Santa Fe.
Okay. Hey, Michael in Santa Fe. How you doing?
Pretty good. What you just said reminded me of Michael Fuentes, who said we can bomb the world into pieces, but we can't bomb our way into peace.
Oh, you got it, 100%.
Yeah. I was going to ask you, I wonder what your take is. What kind of hallucinogenic drug do you think Ralph Nader is taking lately? What's your take on that? You know, as a big Nader fan and a big, you know, I've always supported, I just thought the world of the guy until, you know, recently. And what's your take on Ralph Nader? What's his trip? And how come he doesn't go back to, you know, doing the good work of his nonprofit organizations? And I wonder if you've heard, what is the status of his nonprofit organization and the people in them now that he's, you know, going off on his, I don't know, his trip trying to run for president of the United States. I just wonder what your take is on that.
Well, yeah, mine comes, let me, my perspective real quick is I'm a third-party person by nature. And I,
well,
and,
so am I.
In,
so
in Vermont politics, I've been involved in third-party politics, specifically the Vermont Grassroots Party. I've been... I've run for state office and without getting elected, but that's fine with me. I don't mind not being elected. You get all the credit without any of the work. Oh yeah, you do. People pat you on the back all day long. So with that said, I don't take as dim a view of what Nader's doing. I think without the Ralph Naders to make sure that people, without Ralph Nader there, I think John Kerry would slide right up close to George Bush. I do, because that's the natural tendency of the politics, is to fight over the same group of people. And right now, the Democrats and Republicans predominantly are fighting over about 50% of the voting population. That's my opinion. And I think Ralph Nader keeps it so that John Kerry has also got to pay some attention to the other 50% for whatever they feel, whatever they're looking for. I had the first guest, Mr. Bagdikian, when he was talking about the 22 million women who didn't vote in 2000. Those are 22 million single women that didn't vote. They didn't participate because they didn't feel that any politicians were paying attention. So,
right.
You know, that's where I think Ralph Nader's got a point. I got to go here. I'm missing a break, okay? Thanks a lot.
Thanks. That's a good point.
Okay.
All
bye.
Right. Bye.
Rahm Schneider in for Tom Hartman.
The following phone call was not recorded on February 30th, 2004.
Thank you for calling about DirecTV. My name is Len. How can I help you?
Thank you, sir. Thank goodness you're there. You've got to help me. My cable company is raising their rates again. I don't know what I'm going to do.
It's okay, ma'am. I'm here to help. I'm glad you called.
They're taking away our favorite channels and charging more. It's just wrong.
Ma'am, I get that all the time. Let me help you right away. Would you like to get over 125 channels of your favorite programming for only $39.99?
Will I still be able to get my local channels?
Absolutely. And because you called American Satellite right now, you can get up to a four-room DirecTV system for free and free professional installation for all new customers with an annual programming commitment.
Oh, thank you. My husband, Nick, is going to be so happy.
Call American Satellite at 1-800-505-1542. That's 800-505-1542. Call now and ask how you can get total choice for only $29.99 a month for the first 6 months. A $60 value. 800-505-1542. At $4.99 a month per second and each additional receiver. Offer ends July 17, 2004. Call.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
Tom Hartman will be joining the exceptional faculty of the Great Rethinking, the Prophets Oxford, taking place the weekend of September 10th through 12th at Oxford University, England. You are invited to join Tom Hartman in Oxford, along with other leading visionaries, including Vandana Shiva, Helen Caldicott, and Rupert Sheldrake, among others, to rethink and reshape our collective future. The Great Rethinking Oxford premise is that this tumultuous time in our human history may be crafted into the birthing of something truly new, and you can play your part in shaping this new worldview by joining Tom Hartman September 10th through 12th. To find out how, go to the website greatmystery.org. That's greatmystery.org. Together, we will make a difference.
Thank you.
The best advice for surviving a rip current at the beach might be go with the flow. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. The National Weather Service is one of several organizations that are making a coast-to-coast effort this summer to warn people about rip currents at beaches on the Great Lakes and along the ocean coastline. The campaign is providing simple information about how to survive if you're in the water and find that you're being swept away from shore. Rip currents pull people away from shore and straight out to open water. They often form between a beach and an offshore sandbar. The water that's trapped between the sandbar and the shore eventually has to move back out to open water, and it will cut an opening in the sandbar to escape. It's the movement of water through that opening that creates the rip current. These currents do not pull people below the surface, but they are very strong. Some people say they're stronger than any Olympic swimmer. If you're caught in a rip current, trying to fight it and swim straight back to shore might be the worst thing you can do. Panic and fatigue are the biggest threat of all to someone who's temporarily caught in one of these situations. Experts say rip currents are actually pretty narrow, and sometimes they're only 30 feet wide. That means you can get out of one by swimming parallel to the beach. Once you get past the edge of the current, you'll be in calmer water, and it will be easier to swim back to shore. If that's not possible, experts say you should float with the current offshore until you reach a break in the waves and the current grows weaker. At that point, you should swim at an angle back to the shoreline. More information on rip currents is available from the U.S. Lifesaving Association, the National Weather Service, and state offices of the National Sea Grant College Program. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
15, there's still time for you. Time to buy and time to
All right, Rama Schneider in for Tom Hartman on the Tom Hartman Radio Show. Thank everybody for joining me. All right, thank you. Thank you. Thank you all for joining me. And thanks everybody, especially who's been in the chat room there. I mean, this is a great bunch of people. They come in, make all sorts of witty or intelligent or inane and sometimes obnoxious or stupid comments, but we love them anyway. I just want to give big hugs and kisses to the chat room. And bigger hugs and kisses to the phone line. Chris from New Mexico. How you doing, Chris?
Oh, you're such a tease, Rome.
Oh, gosh.
Anyway, I don't know if it's one of the 50, but how about a poisonous, stupid, counterproductive foreign policy that has just, made things so much worse?
What? What are you talking about?
George W. Bush. Well, just a few minutes ago, the news broke that they beheaded that poor guy that they were holding.
Oh, did they?
In Saudi Arabia, yeah. We knew that was going to happen.
Yeah, I know.
When it gets most egregious to me is when they have to back up their lies with no evidence, like when the 9/11 Commission came out and said basically there's no collaborative relationship between Al-Qaeda and Osama bin Laden,
yep.
And the White House has put itself in a position where they have to say, well, yes, there is,
yep.
and they cannot back it up with any credible evidence. If they had any evidence, perhaps, that the 9/11 Commission didn't have, why would they have evidence that the 9/11 Commission didn't have? So they have no other recourse but to stand there with their faces hanging out stupidly and just repeat a lie.
Yep.
There's no credibility in these people at all.
No, and sadly, you're right. When you use the term no credibility, that's exactly what it is. Other than there's a diehard. There's about 40%, maybe a few less, that will end up voting for them. I'm becoming convinced of this, and I think we'll see it when Bush's approval numbers are, because they spiked up a little bit from the Reagan funeral week,
yep.
There. But things aren't going to change. Nothing's going to change in Iraq. If anything, it's just going to get worse. No matter all the words they put to it are just more words, the same like they did anything else, and it's just going to keep going down in Iraq. And I think when you see Bush's approval ratings dip under 40%, you know that's it. You know?
We're just politics. It would be shameful enough, but
yep.
Unfortunately, people are dying
yep.
because of these people, because of these freckled idiots that we have in the White House. It's madness.
All right. Thank you, Chris. I got to let you go now. We're coming up top of the hour break. All right. Rama Schneider sitting in for Tom Hartman on the Tom Hartman Radio Show. You can catch Tom Hartman on Janine Garofalo, 8 p.m. That's Air America, 8 p.m. Eastern Time tonight. More to come.
Been listening to the Tom Hartman program? Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner. A federal program set up to give low-income schools access to the Internet keeps crashing. A Federal Communications Commission official told lawmakers on Thursday that the E-rate program is rife with fraud, waste, and abuse. Companies such as IBM are taking advantage of school districts' naivete, selling them elaborate Internet packages better suited to multinational industries than school libraries. In El Paso, Texas, for instance, IBM received $35 million and built an Internet system so complex that no school official could run it. IBM then set up a $27 million help center at taxpayer expense. Before long, government funds dried up, prompting IBM to shut down the entire operation.
Hit by slumping sales and a spate of recalls on popular models, Mitsubishi Motors has announced across-the-board wage cuts for everyone in the company. Executives will take 25 to 50% salary cuts this year, while those at the bottom of the corporate ladder will suffer 5% wage reductions over the next 2 years.
A meltdown in contract talks has hundreds of nuclear power plant workers in Massachusetts poised for a strike. This week, about 400 technicians with Utility Workers Union of America in Plymouth okayed a mid-July work stoppage at the Pilgrim Station nuclear power plant, a strike that threatens to disrupt power supplies during the Democratic National Convention later that month. The union says a reduction in staffing levels has left employees dangerously overworked. Plant managers say they're ready to operate the 670-megawatt nuclear facility with the help of replacement workers.
Three Americans face arrest and deportation for a hunger strike being carried out in Taiwan to protest an ongoing lockout of American workers at a facility owned by a Taiwanese company. Continental Carbon Company, which makes chemicals used in the manufacture of tires, locked out 86 workers at its Ponca City, Oklahoma factory in 2001 after they refused to take wage and benefit reductions amounting to as much as $20,000 per worker. Last week, a delegation from the U.S. went to Taiwan to protest at Continental Carbon's parent company. They went on a hunger strike 9 days ago and since then have been put under heavy surveillance by the country's police force. They've also been threatened with deportation, but so far remain unmolested.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. A new study by Families USA finds almost 82 million Americans went without health coverage for at least 1 month during the past 2 years. Two-thirds were found to be uninsured for at least 6 months, nearly one out of every three Americans below the age of 65. Amazingly, four out of five uninsured people were employed or actively looking for work. You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
Excellent news, Americans! U.S. corporations say that they are no longer offshoring our middle-class jobs. It seems that they've grown afraid of the rising public anger at this self-serving fattening of their already ample bottom lines at the expense of working families. They fear that there will be a political backlash from workers, customers, Congress, and plain old American patriots. Does this mean that greed-headed CEOs are no longer shipping our manufacturing, professional, and high-tech jobs to India, Pakistan, Russia, and other low-wage centers? Of course not. It simply means that they no longer say the word offshoring. Instead, the doublespeak artists of corporate PR departments have coined new euphemisms. Rather than offshoring, they now call it remote global sourcing, or right-shoring, to disguise the perfidy. A new report finds that offshoring, by whatever name, is not only continuing unabated, but accelerating rapidly and expanding into new fields. If you're an architect, if you do legal work or tax preparation, if you're an editor or radiologist, say bye-bye to your professional position, for CEOs are putting these and many more on a virtual boat overseas, with about 80% of the jobs going to India, where they can get the work done for a third or less than they pay to us Americans. The report, prepared by Forrester Research, says that offshoring is increasing dramatically. Forrester's previous prediction was that the U.S. would lose 588,000 jobs to offshoring by the end of this year. Now it estimates that 830,000 will be lost, a 41% increase. Nearly half of corporations surveyed say they're either offshoring jobs now or preparing to. Well, says one offshoring specialist, so what? Quote, it's free enterprise. We're trying to make money. Yeah, and so are bank robbers. This is Jim Hightower saying the proper word for what these CEOs are doing is not offshoring, it's stealing. They're stealing America's middle-class future.
I am Gunnery Sergeant Arlie Ermey, United States Marine Corps. While our armed forces defend our freedom, their families shoulder household duties and emergencies alone. To help, the veterans of foreign wars and Vermont American brand Bits and Blades have created the Unmet Needs Program.
Rufus Forrest here, VFW Senior Administrator. Please support the Unmet Needs Program by purchasing Vermont American Bits and Blades. A portion of each purchase goes to help families.
Visit unmetneeds.com and buy Vermont American brand Bits and Blades. Thank you and Semper Fi. Hoorah!
Great news from Viagra Sildenafil Citrate. Now there's a card that can get you Viagra for free. Introducing the Value Card for Viagra. With it, every time you fill 6 eligible prescriptions, you'll get the next one completely free. There's no other Viagra, and there's no other offer like this. To get your card, ask your pharmacist or healthcare provider, or go to ViagraCard.com. See the value again and again with the Value Card for Viagra. Go to ViagraCard.com today. Offer may not be available in all areas.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back to the Tom Hartman Radio Show. Rama Schneider sitting in for the Tom Meister, who is off on taking care of personal business today. So I've been given command of the Starship Thomas Show. You know, I've got all the buttons and the lights flashing in front of me. If you do want to hear Tom, he's going to be on with the Majority Report, Air America. That's Janine Garofalo and whoever the poor guy is whose name I don't know, because all I know is Janine Garofalo. But he's supposed to be on in their first hour. That should be 8 p.m. Eastern time on Air America, so you can catch him live. And then we're expecting him back on, come, you know, by Monday, I assume, probably before Monday. But I don't live with the guy, so that's none of my business. All right, this hour, you know, we all heard about the trouble over in Iraq as far as the treatment of the prisoners go, and, you know, use your whatever term you want to use, torture or enhanced interrogation, however you want to put it. And we heard about treatment of prisoners down in Guantanamo, over in Iraq, over in Afghanistan, and in various super-secret little CIA and special forces-run prisons throughout the world, apparently, where they're busy drowning people for information. One of the things that kind of and we hear throughout this discussion is how the this doesn't represent America. These are just a few bad apples that are doing this stuff. And I think what kind of leads a lie to that statement that these are just a few bad apples is if we turn and we look inside of the United States of America and we take a look at our prison system, what we find is not necessarily a very pretty picture in itself. And that brings me to the book, Gates of Injustice, The Crisis in American Prisons, by Alan Elsner. And how are you doing, Alan?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. And, I got to say before we start this, just so you understand, I really haven't read much of your book yet, though, but I'm going to take it home with me afterwards because this isn't a topic that really interests me. I'm going to take it home and read it because it seems like it's really, I mean, it certainly reads as it's well written and it seems like a very well put together book, so... Forgive me if I act like I don't know everything that's in the book, because at this moment I don't, but if you talk to me tomorrow, I will.
Well, you can have me on again once you've read it.
Whether I've read the book or not, this is an extremely important topic, and I certainly thank you for taking the time to talk to us and talk to all the listeners about this. Let me just start off with this. It's one paragraph towards the beginning of the book. From 1980 to 2001, the annual number of drugs-related arrests tripled to reach 1,586,900, or 4,348 arrests a day. That's a drug-related arrest every 20 seconds, of which most, 80%, well, around, actually, to keep quoting, around 20% were for selling or manufacturing, 80% were for possession, and mandatory sentencing laws meant not only that more Americans were going to prison for nonviolent crimes, but they were staying behind bars for much longer. The average sentence imposed by the U.S. District Courts for drug offenses rose from 54.5 months in 1980 to 75.5 months in 2000. For assault, the figure was 33 months. That's less than half. I mean, smoke some pot and you're likely to go to jail for longer than assault. And for fraud, according to your book, it's 23 months. So,
that's crazy. That's one of the things I'm trying to point out. And those are not my figures. Those are government figures. Those
right.
are Department of Justice figures. That you can go to jail for possessing a few ounces of marijuana for more than twice as long as you get for assault. And one of the key arguments that I'm making in this book is that we really have to stop this crazy so-called war on drugs that we've been fighting for over 25 years, which is costing us $20 billion a year and has led to the size of our prison population actually quadrupling. growing by four times as much,
there you
as
go.
Four times as big as it was in 1980. We have by far the largest prison population in the world. We have a quarter of all the world's prisoners. We only have 5% of the world's population. It's amazing that we have more prisoners in this country behind bars than they have in China.
Well,
and it's costing us huge amounts of tax dollars, and you know, hundreds of thousands of these people shouldn't be there, in my opinion.
Yeah, well, it occurs to me, you say we have a quarter of the world's prisoners behind bars. We also use a quarter of the world's oil, so I wonder if there's a connection, but that's for a different show.
I don't think so. I don't think those guys behind bars are using oil. You know, that's probably one of the ways we decrease our petroleum consumption by
Except
not having
now,
them driving
in,
around.
In some ways, maybe they are, and I'm not. And for those who have been in the prison system, they'd recognize the term diesel therapy, where they stick prisoners on buses and keep shipping them around the country so they can't put roots down anywhere. But isn't part of the issue, though, that with all these prisoners going in, that there's the I guess we'll call it not the prison industry in the sense of the prisons themselves, but the industries that use prison labor. Isn't that growing by leaps and bounds along with this?
Well, there is, you know, a prison industrial nexus that's grown up in this country, and prison industry is pretty big. It's now private prisons are about 10% of the whole system. So that's a considerable amount of money, and there are big corporations behind it. We also have prison towns now, which are completely dependent on prisons for their employment, and they've put them in a lot of rural areas where other industries may have fallen apart, like in Appalachia. They put them where the coal industry fell apart, or in Northern California. There's one county in Colorado, Fremont County, has 13 prisons, 9 state and 4 federal. So that's part of the issue as well. And then there's the industry that supplies prisons with all the latest whiz-bang technology, like, you know, the latest kind of pepper spray or the latest kind of stun guns,
right,
or stab-proof vests, whatever it may be. So there's a huge prison lobby in this country now, and it's going to fight to keep those beds filled.
1-866-889-8894 if you want to participate in the show. And there's also that big group of extremely well-paid, we call them public servants, but you know, I'm referring to these politicians down in D.C. and in the state capitals that love to go around to make more laws to funnel more people through the prison system. Isn't that happening too?
Well, it's been a huge problem. In the last 25 years, politicians became very afraid of being labeled as so-called soft on crime.
Right.
So they really kind of compete with each other to outdo one another to see who can be meanest and who can be so-called toughest and most punitive,
yeah,
to prisoners. So not only have they slashed programs, the rehabilitative programs inside the prisons that give a chance to people to go straight afterwards, not only have they taken away coffee and tea and TV and all, and some of the few things that make life worth living, but they've also created an atmosphere in which abuse can fester and grow and thrive. And that's what we have in our prison system. We have a very abusive prison system. That's not to say that the majority of correctional officers are abusers.
Right.
I don't think that's true. But the ones who are have the feeling that they can get away with it, and they do.
Now, that's interesting you say that. I have a hesitate to call her a good friend, but I know her fairly well, and I have a lot of respect for the lady up here in Vermont who I talk to frequently. She's involved with women's prison issues, and she says actually, in her view, while the abuse does take place, the rapes and the assaults, etc., that they do tend to prosecute the people, but they do it so quietly we would never know. Is that reflected in anything you saw?
I think in the majority of cases, in rape cases, They don't prosecute.
Really?
If it's inmate on inmate rape,
no,
oftentimes they actually use it as a management tool. They allow the most aggressive and the most dangerous prisoners to kind of let off some of their excess energy and steam by abusing and victimizing and torturing the weak and vulnerable prisoners,
right,
and that keeps the facility calm. And in the case of correctional officers, when you talk about women, you know, unless there's solid cast iron evidence that abuse has taken place, most of the women won't even complain because they think it's a waste of time. After all, they are convicted felons or criminals, and they're going up against somebody who's a correctional officer. Now, you know, in all rape cases, it comes down to he said, she said situations. But if one side has all the power and the other side is already, you know, a so-called criminal, then the deck is stacked very heavily against the woman. So very often they won't complain. There have been an increasing number of cases where they've actually kept some of the evidence in the form of semen stains. They do
right.
a Monica Lewinsky, so to speak.
Yeah.
And in that case, even in those cases, oftentimes they'll just let the guy quietly retire or resign and nothing more is done. I spoke to a prosecutor in Texas recently, and this was a case of a correctional officer who abused two separate prisoners, male-on-male rape. And both of them kept the evidence in the form of the DNA.
Uh-huh.
And the jury in this rural Texas county still refused to convict the guy. He was acquitted. So the cards are so heavily stacked against the inmate in these cases that oftentimes these crimes are not punished.
Yeah. You can't trust a prisoner, and of course the guards and the cops never lie. We're talking to Alan.
And you know, another point, just to make the other point, is that in these rural communities, when you try to seat the jury, half of them are related to the guards, or the neighbors of the guards, or they know them because they see them in the church or in the supermarket. So there's a lot of solidarity. These people are members of the community, and the juries are just reluctant to convict, not only in rape cases, but also in assault cases or abuse cases. And so, you know, that's part of the climate that I was talking about.
Yeah. Well, we're talking to Alan Elsner. He's the author of Gates of Injustice, The Crisis in America's Prisons. What got you interested in this topic?
Well, I work for Reuters News Agency. I'm the national correspondent. And in 2001, I started doing a series of articles about the prison system, which I thought was very underreported.
Right.
And I just got hooked on it. There's 2.2 million people behind bars in this country. That's, you know, the size of a pretty major city. And yet nobody really knows. We know in vague terms what's going on, but we really don't know in detail. I don't think we care to know in detail. So I was interested in writing a book that really, in a relatively short amount of pages, 250-odd pages,
yep,
would tell people everything that they needed to know about our system. And it's not just, and how it affects them. It's not just the abuse that goes on behind bars. There's, for instance, the issue of the spread of communicable or infectious diseases,
right,
from the prison system to the rest of community, which most people are completely unaware of. They don't know that the prisons and jails are releasing about 600,000 people a year who are carrying TB, for instance.
Right.
They don't know that. And they say, there's this attitude, why should it affect me? Why did it? I'm not going there.
Alan,
my kids are never going there.
Alan,
the fact is, it affects everyone.
Okay, we're coming up on a break, Alan, and I want to thank you very much for talking to us about the book.
Well, thank you.
And you have a great day.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates block out viruses. That speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
It is one of the most powerful books you'll ever read, full of the wisdom of ancient cultures and the directed hope of modern thinkers. The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late by Tom Hartman. Discover how we're made of sunlight and what this has to do with the impact of fossil fuels on civilization. Read about the coming new ice age and what must be done soon. Understand how ancient cultures valued community and cooperation and what we can learn from them. Get in touch with the secret of enough, the meaning of wealth, and the wealth of security. The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight helps us understand and heal our relationship to the world, to each other, and to our natural resources. We have much to learn and even more to remember. Here is your guide, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late by Tom Hartman, in bookstores everywhere.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
when I think about getting older. It's not dying I worry about, it's living and being buried under a pile of medical bills I can't pay for.
Healthcare costs are soaring. Millions more Americans are uninsured, and those who have coverage are paying more out of pocket. Yet President Bush offers no plan to curb costs, and his new Medicare law would actually ban the government from negotiating lower prices from drug companies.
The cost of these drugs, it's very scary.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
Down at the well, they got a new machine. The woman says it cuts manpower.
And welcome back to the Tom Hartman Radio Show. Rama Schneider sitting in for Tom Hartman. 1-866-889-8894. Heading right over to the phones and Roberta from New Mexico. How you doing, Roberta?
Yeah. Hey, Rama. It's good to hear you, and thank you for having me on. Don't get me started. I wanted to say on this book, 50 Reasons Not to Vote for Bush, yeah. The son of a Bush. I would like to see someone write a book. Maybe I'll do it myself, but I don't think I have that much tenacity. I would like to see someone write a book on 100 reasons not to be a fascist.
Uh-huh.
The emperor has no clothes, hello, and he's butt naked. He's hiding behind the bootjack fascist.
Yeah.
And I wish the corporations who make the money off the war would have to pay for the reparations of rebuilding, and not us. We didn't vote for him. We didn't vote for war.
Roberta, they're not there to take responsibility. They're there to take profits.
Of course.
Yeah.
And there has to be a way. I mean, if we could, we used to say in the 60s, what if they gave a war and nobody came? I'd like to see some statistics on conscientious objectors. You know, Catholics should really be conscientious objectors because the Pope and the bishops have said this is not a just war.
Yep.
And so, but the American priests are not talking about it except for the Jesuits.
Well, I don't know about where you live, Roberta. I do know here in Vermont is we actually have a very vocal clergy at all ends of the political spectrum. And They really do. And for the most part, those that, for instance, the anti-war, et cetera, they have no hesitancy about speaking out. Same-sex unions.
There were a few in Minnesota who spoke with the Berrigans on the draft resistance.
Right.
But there is a Jesuit here in New Mexico who is very vocal, and he is actually being axed out of communities because they're for the war.
Uh-huh.
And he isn't. Uh-huh. But anyway, I wanted to talk to you about jail. The fellow, because when I was in the Minneapolis workhouse for my civil revolt,
right.
I could see there was abuse, and I'm sure it's much worse now. But, you know, I went on a hunger strike and because of it. And I was only there for 10 days, but I, the hose and the other women in there almost started a riot because of my hunger strike, because I was going on a hunger strike. They were sticking up for me. I mean, there is a terrible, and I talked to a woman later on who was a guard. She said, "You're the kind of prisoner we hate. Because, you know, you take stands and you...
And you're smart. That's
cause right.
They don't like smart people because the guards, you know, these aren't... I hate to say it, but you don't attend 4 years of college and go get, most times get a job as, well, used to be, maybe nowadays, but, you know, they don't attract the four-year college degree crowd for a prison guard.
Well, they attract... I think it attracts people who are...
high school diploma, straight out of the military.
They have an ego, a very sick ego need. And I know when I was being stripped and searched, I wasn't ready for that. I didn't know I had to go through that. But I had to do a spiritual thing like Gandhi taught. And I thought to myself, this system victimizes the guards as well as the prisoners, because they are being actually encouraged to be sort of depraved. And I had to sort of like say a prayer for the guard, even though I detested what she was doing.
Right.
And I could see what the system, and Gandhi taught, concentrate on the systems and not personalities.
All right, Roberta.
And that's the thing that got me through it.
Well, great. Thank you. And I certainly appreciate that last part of the story there. That's great. I got to let you go, though. We're coming up to the break.
Okay, Rama. Thank you.
You have a great day.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Rama Schneider sitting in for Tom Hartman and the Tom Hartman Radio Show. Chuck from New Mexico will be up when we come back.
A must read, The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. Ed Halliwell, a nationally recognized expert on ADD, said this about the Edison Gene.
Tom Hartman demonstrates that ADHD can be associated with creativity, high achievement, and a most successful adaptive style.
The Edison Gene, now available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner. A federal program set up to give low-income schools access to the Internet keeps crashing. A Federal Communications Commission official told lawmakers on Thursday that the E-rate program is rife with fraud, waste, and abuse. Companies such as IBM are taking advantage of school districts' naivete, selling them elaborate Internet packages better suited to multinational industries than school libraries. In El Paso, Texas, for instance, IBM received $35 million and built an Internet system so complex that no school official could run it. IBM then set up a $27 million help center at taxpayer expense. Before long, government funds dried up, prompting IBM to shut down the entire operation.
Hit by slumping sales and a spate of recalls on popular models, Mitsubishi Motors has announced across-the-board wage cuts for everyone in the company. Executives will take 25 to 50% salary cuts this year, while those at the bottom of the corporate ladder will suffer 5% wage reductions over the next 2 years.
A meltdown in contract talks has hundreds of nuclear power plant workers in Massachusetts poised for a strike. This week, about 400 technicians with the Utility Workers Union of America in Plymouth okayed a mid-July work stoppage at the Pilgrim Station nuclear power plant, a strike that threatens to disrupt power supplies during the Democratic National Convention later that month. The union says a reduction in staffing levels has left employees dangerously overworked. Plant managers say they're ready to operate the 670-megawatt nuclear facility with the help of replacement workers.
Three Americans face arrest and deportation for a hunger strike being carried out in Taiwan to protest an ongoing lockout of American workers at a facility owned by a Taiwanese company. Continental Carbon Company, which makes chemicals used in the manufacture of tires, locked out 86 workers at its Ponca City, Oklahoma factory in 2001 after they refused to take wage and benefit reductions amounting to as much as $20,000 per worker. Last week, a delegation from the U.S. went to Taiwan to protest at Continental Carbon's parent company. They went on a hunger strike 9 days ago and since then have been put under heavy surveillance by the country's police force. They've also been threatened with deportation, but so far remain unmolested.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. A new study by Families USA finds almost 82 million Americans went without health coverage for at least 1 month during the past 2 years. Two-thirds were found to be uninsured for at least 6 months, nearly one out of every three Americans below the age of 65. Amazingly, four out of five uninsured people were employed or actively looking for work. You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
I am just a poor boy, though my story is seldom told. I squandered my resistance.
Wait a minute. Full of mumbles, such a promise. I haven't squandered it all yet.
All lies and jest, till the man hears what he wants to hear.
No, I'm not what I want to hear. I'm what I am. I'm real. I'm me. I'm him. I'm Rama. This is the Tom Hartman Radio Show. I'm Rama Schneider, filling in for the ever-eloquent, grand, and effervescent. He's a bubbly character, he is, Tom Hartman. Tom off taking care of personal business. He will be on Air America tonight, the Majority Report. And by gosh, somebody gave me the name of the guest host who's going to be on there with the host whose name I always remember, only that scrolled so far up I'm not going to try to go look for it. But anyway, around 8 p.m. Air America, you can hear the Tom Meister bringing us his words of wisdom there tonight. That'll be great, huh? As somebody had mentioned earlier, unfortunately, and the headlines are all across the news wires now that the gentleman, what was his name? Paul Johnson, I guess. Paul Johnson Jr. There is he has apparently been murdered by his kidnappers. So it's a sad story, but you know, it's a war zone over there, and I'm terribly sorry for anybody caught up in that war zone, whether they come from Iraq or the United States or wherever they come from. It's just a war zone. It's not a pretty place to be caught up in, period, and for anybody. For whatever it's worth, this kind of European Union leaders are close today, apparently, to overcoming disputes over power sharing to clinch a first ever constitution. That's for the European Union. That's going to be pretty interesting. I mean, that's a block. That would make like the United States of Europe almost. They're more along a federation line of thinking there, but it's still going to be quite interesting to keep an eye on Europe, see what happens. Chuck from New Mexico, you're there. How you doing, Chuck?
I'm doing pretty well. Hey, listen, I got a question for you real fast. You have the most fascinating name. I mean, your first name is from one of the heroes of, Hindu philosophy, and you have a Jewish last name. Where does this come from?
You want the whole name. Here's the whole name, if you think that's it. The two middle names are Odysseus Alaric. Which, of course, the Odysseus, the Greek king, and Alaric, who was, depending on what version of history, I'm either named after a Visigoth prince or a Gothic king. And, I'm not that choosy either way, so, you know. So
I don't know, but I got to tell you, I have a master's degree in Eastern philosophy, and I'm just sitting here listening to this name going, okay, well, this is different. So I figure, what the heck, I'd ask you this. What do you think would be the best way, the best approach in changing, I don't know if it's a constitutional thing or if it's just a legal thing, how do we fix ethics in this country?
How do we fix ethics? Start at home. Start with my opinion, and I'm not saying when I say the word you, Chuck, I'm not meaning you personally. I'm meaning you as an
individual. You.
Right, yeah. One needs to start with oneself under these circumstances. It's one of those things that if you're an honest individual and you deal with honest people and you're honest to the people around you, even if they're not necessarily all that honest back to you, honesty spreads. Ethics spreads. You must be familiar with with memes, right? M-E-M-E-S?
Sure.
Right? Memes being this concept, you know, for folks that aren't too familiar, a close analogy would be like a DNA structure that parents pass on to their kids. A meme is a concept. It's a thought process that one passes on to their kids. Christianity is a meme. My country, right or wrong, is a meme. Join the military, you'll become a man, you know, having your parents tell you that. That's a meme. These things genuinely are contagious, and they work, you know, and if you can't force ethics onto somebody. If you try to force it on, they resist and they fight back, and they fight back the way they know how to fight back. You don't change them. You just get in a big fight. So what you know, I think this is something that we need to start at home, and in the words of Crosby, Still, Nash & Young, teach your children well. You know, I think that's, to me, in my opinion, I'm raising my daughter to be a good, upstanding, liberal citizen of the future. And I'm doing it very deliberately, too. You know?
Well, thanks very much, Rama. I just wanted to hear your anybody with a name like that, I figure, has got to have an opinion.
Well, I didn't tell you where it came from real quick, and seeing as that was a specific question you asked, my father, who was a very well-read person, was reading this very multi-volume, I think it was like 27 volumes of books dealing with Asian Indian mythology and religion. You might have heard of it.
The Ramayana, probably.
Well, this was the Ocean of Stories.
Ah, okay, yeah.
And at the time I was born, he happened to be reading about Rama. So there I was. So.
Well, I can tell you, you know, people should go out and read about Rama because he's a hell of a hero.
Oh, well, thank you. Oh, no, the other Rama. Okay.
Yeah. Well, you're named after him. There you go.
Yeah. Oh, I take it for what it's worth. All right.
Absolutely.
Thank you very much, Chuck. You have a great day. Yeah, well, it's kind of interesting where names come from. Something that people might want to be thinking about. How about a great campaign slogan? I guess this came from the Washington Post or some such twiddle. The Washington Post apparently is having a contest for presidential campaign slogans, and you can only submit one for Kerry and one for Bush. So you can do things like John Kerry, Free Nation, Fair Trade, and Respect for the World. George Bush, Fear Nation, Slave Wages, and Contempt of the World. John Kerry, Freedom, Truth, and Peace. George Bush, Fear, Lies, and War. You know, I got to tell you, John Kerry is not for peace. No, 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 no. Don't confuse yourself. Don't think. I'm not trying to beat up. As a matter of fact, I've listened to Kerry talk. I've listened to some recordings of interviews that he's given dealing with foreign relations. I think he's got a lot of good things to say, but if you're looking for the peace candidate, you're not looking for John Kerry. Wonderful job numbers, right? I mean, we've had, 1.5 million new jobs or something this year so far? It's somewhere around 1.5 million, right? It sounds so good. First thing, I guess before we get into talking about jobs and what they're really looking like, I deliberately didn't bring stuff to try to get into this type of a discussion. But if you go and you look at how they generate those jobs, the new jobs figures, it actually just becomes apparent that these job numbers are nothing but wild guesses. Okay, these job numbers may not have any bearing on reality whatsoever. The short version of how they generate these job numbers that you see every month, like the 248,000 new jobs in May, they come up with those numbers with a combination of two things. One, they do a sampling where businesses call in and self-report. Okay, So, you know, if you want to make the job market look good, I guess you're going to say you maybe add it on. I don't know. But anyway, it's a small sampling of businesses that are that self-report, by the way, electronically. I mean, I don't know if they use Diebold machines or not. That's something you'll have to ask somebody else. And then this self-reporting is combined with a lot of assumptions that were based on the self-reporting and assumptions of the previous month, that were based on the self-reporting and assumptions of the month before that, that were based on the self-reporting and assumptions manana, manana, manana. In other words, nobody goes out and counts the jobs and comes up with, nobody goes out, you know, with 248,000 fingers and counts all the jobs. You don't even, it's not even close. And to be honest, is, you know, I think that the job figures they come out with the federal government, if you can believe our federal government at the moment, which I have a hard time doing anyway, they put, the feds put the probability of these numbers being correct. They, oh, no, no, what's their phrase? They have a 90% confidence level. In other, you know, so when you hear these jobs figures, okay, the first thing is to ask, well, who counted the jobs? And how many jobs did you actually count? Okay, that's the first thing to deal with when you understand about these jobs figures, whether it's decline or increase, the government really doesn't know. Okay, they want to pretend they know, and of course, when they want to make the economy look good, their assumptions probably flip over to a more positive version. When you want to make the economy look not so good, I'm sure they turn around and they use some negative assumptions. You know, and I don't know. Look, from everything that I've seen about the Bush administration, it would not surprise me either if they just cherry-picked the good numbers, you know, self-reporting. They go through the list. Let me see. They added jobs. Keep that. They added. They added. They dropped. Eliminate them. They dropped. Nope, scratch them. They dropped. Scratch them. They added. They added. You know, that sort of stuff. That's just that last bit is pure personal speculation, but it wouldn't surprise me. But the big thing to remember, these jobs numbers are made up by sampling that is done by self-reporting that is combined with a bunch of assumptions that are made based upon the previous month's sample and assumptions, et cetera, as you go back in time. So take it. So when they say all these jobs, I mean, basically, other than a PR thing, I'm not sure how much they really mean. But anyway, the 248,000 new jobs in May looks good as an aggregate number. You know, the total number, which is the only number, of course, we get. You know, we get, 248,000 jobs, new jobs in May. But if you look at the components, it kind of gets a little, it presents a very, very different picture. And I think it's the Economic Policy Institute, EPI.org, I think, puts out weekly snapshots about this, who have pointed out much the same thing as I'm looking at here. American job growth is concentrated in low-paid domestic services such as restaurants and bars, temporary help, and health care and social assistance. Of the 248,000 new jobs, 213,000 are in domestic services and construction. These are not jobs that can help reduce the massive U.S. trade deficit by producing tradable goods and services. And, you know, the construction jobs, these are seasonal type jobs. Housing starts are down, you know. So when they hire right this time of year, you bet your butt up here in Vermont, they're hiring construction workers and painters and people who will go out and work on the roads for the summer all over the place. Easy, you know, but those are seasonal jobs. Something is wrong. We're told we live in a global economy, but the jobs growing in the United States are not part of the global economy. Advanced technology products are touted as America's manufacturing advantage. However, the U.S. suffered its first ever trade deficit in advanced technology products in 2002. The deficit grew significantly in 2003 and is growing this year. That's our advanced technology products deficit. Charles McMillan at MBG Information Services in Washington, D.C. forecast a U.S. 2004 deficit in advanced technology products to be $35 billion for 2004. That's the difference between how much advanced technology will import and how much will export. And that's according to the Washington Times, no less, a bastion of conservative apologists, shall we say. So you're getting all these jobs created, and whether they're actually being created or not is a totally, you know, it's anybody's guess. Take your guess. It's as good as mine. I mean, when you come up with jobs figures based on samples of self-reporting combined with assumptions made on the prior month, you know, you don't necessarily come out with good figures. On top of that, according to the L.A. Times, immigrants are filling nearly 3 out of every 10 new jobs in the, well, they call it rebounding U.S. economy. Rebounding for who? Okay, if I'm a CEO, oh boy, am I rebounding. I'm going from multimillionaire to multibillionaire. But anyway, immigrants are filling nearly 3 out of the 10 new jobs, according to the L.A. Times, an article written by Ricardo Alonso Zaldivar, a Times staff reporter. Reporting on a report from the Pew Hispanic Center that found workers who are not U.S. citizens claimed 378,496 jobs out of a net increase of 1.3 million from the first 3 months of 2003 through the first 3 months of this year. And let's remember now, if you go to the Economic Policy Institute and go back I think about a month or so, I'd have to go look for it again, but EPI.org, and you look at their weekly snapshots, you'll see they put up a nice graphic of the United States with all of the states color-coded, all 50 of them color-coded, one of two colors. The light color meant that state had actually the new jobs created were paying more than the jobs that had been lost, and the dark color on the graphic on the map was showing states where the new jobs were paying less, in most cases substantially less, than the jobs that had gone away. And the funny thing is about that whole graphic, I looked at it, the whole graphic, 2 states out of 50 were the light colored. Only 2 states out of 50 were replacing their high-paid jobs with the low-paying jobs. 2 out of 50. Rama Schneider in for Tom Hartman. We'll be back.
Are you frustrated by your constant inability to lose weight? Are you looking for a natural, clinically proven weight loss breakthrough? Introducing CarboBlocker. Unlike anything else on the market, CarboBlocker is backed by clinical research that proves it effectively helps block the fattening effects of carbs without stimulants. Your body will think you're eating a low-carb diet even when you're not. The results are simply amazing. If you want to maintain the weight loss effects of low-carb dieting for the long run, if you're tired of clothes that are too tight and you want to look fit and sexy, then CarboBlocker is for you. It's clinically effective. Formula is safe, natural, and stimulant-free. And as a special introductory offer, when you order 2 bottles of Carbo Blocker, you'll get 2 bottles of Appetite Blocker absolutely free. Call in the next 10 minutes, and you'll also receive 2 free books, Lose Fat Now and the Low Carb Cookbook, a $100 value, absolutely free. So call now, 1-800-743-5704. Guaranteed to work or your money back, so call now, 1-800-743-5704. That's 1-800-743-5704.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. Americans. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Are you or a loved one making too many trips to the bathroom? Listen closely because you're not alone. Over 30 million men suffer from an enlarged prostate. That's why if you make frequent trips to the bathroom, have urgency, hesitancy, or a diminished sex drive, then Super Prostate Formula is for you. It was designed by nationally recognized physician Dr. Michael Toplitzky. The results with his patients have been amazing. Reclaim control now and join the thousands of satisfied customers who have had incredible results with Super Prostate Formula. When you order two bottles of Dr. Toplitzky's Super Prostate Formula, you'll also get two bottles of his Super Libido Formula, an all-natural alternative to Viagra to enhance sexual vitality and performance, plus his book, Complete Guide to Prostate Health, and his newsletter, a total $100 value free as your gift. Guaranteed, or your money back. If you're not completely satisfied, return it for a full refund and keep his Libido Formula book and newsletter free as your gift. Not available in stores? Call now. 800-452-0978. 800-452-0978. That's 800-452-0978.
We're at a dangerous tipping point on the global environment, according to a veteran environmental analyst. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. In 1977, President Jimmy Carter ordered a government report on global and environmental trends. Gus Speth served on the committee that took up the task.
We started out almost 25 years ago identifying this agenda of global scale concerns. Problems like climate disruption, loss of ocean fisheries, deforestation in the tropics, water shortages. We put it on the agenda almost 25 years ago, and it's been a huge response.
Speth says the response is seen in a number of treaties and advances in environmental science, but he says we've made practical progress on only one major environmental problem, the destruction of the ozone layer. Just about everything else continues to worsen. Ocean fisheries are at or beyond capacity. We're losing an acre of tropical forest every second, and species extinctions are at an all-time high. Speth has written a new book called Red Sky at Morning. It warns that our actions to address these environmental crises have been insufficient, and we're running out of time.
Over the next 20, 25 years, we're going to see an appalling environmental deterioration, much worse than anything we've seen so far, if we don't respond truly aggressively and urgently to these issues and take a different approach from the one that we've taken so far.
Speth says population growth and our consumption of resources are overwhelming the Earth. He says it's not too late to turn things around, but we can't wait any longer.
The scale of human activity on this planet is so enormous and growing so fast that the future losses will be more serious than the past. We're kind of in a race to the finish here. Whatever slack nature caught us is gone.
That's Gus Speth, author of Red Sky at Morning. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
All right, welcome back to the Tom Hartman Radio Show. Rama Schneider sitting in for the Tom Meister. He's down somewhere in far-off lands taking care of personal business, but he will be on the majority report tonight, first hour, I guess, 8 p.m. Eastern Time. That's with Sam Cedar and Janine Garofalo. So I finally got it there. Sam Cedar. Yeah. You know, God, it must be horrible to be overpowered by such a cute-looking intellect like Janine Garofalo. And she'd probably punch me in the face for saying it that way, because she doesn't like pandering. I love to pander to people, though. It always makes me feel like I'm getting somewhere, you know? All right. The most bizarre... Absolutely the most bizarre headline I've seen here. Martial law threatened for Iraq. This is from FT.com, Financial Times. June 17th. Iraq's incoming government is considering imposing martial law to help stabilize the country after another two car bomb attacks on Thursday killed at least 41 Iraqis. And I just, I looked at that and I'm sorry, I had to sit back and I had to wonder just if they're not under martial law right now, I mean, what does martial law look like? There's a scary thought. I mean, if we don't have a Patriot Act now, what's the Patriot Act 2 going to look like? That's a scary one. Hey, kudos for Democratic presidential candidate John Kerry proposing to raise the federal minimum wage to $7 an hour by 2007. Well, okay, a little slow on the uptake there, John, but that's all right. I give you kudos for the intent. The proposal calls for phasing in the $1.85 increase, mirrors Democratic-sponsored plans proposed in the House and Senate. Of course, $7 an hour isn't very good, but what the heck? It's better than whatever it is now, right? Kerry said 3 out of 4 women who would benefit from the increase are adults. Such a boost in the minimum wage, which has not changed from $5.15 since 1997, would provide a family with enough money to buy 10 months of groceries or pay for 8 months of rent, according to Mr. Kerry. Inflation has eroded the value of the last increase in minimum wage, Kerry said. Quote, in very real terms, this only serves to keep many hardworking Americans from getting ahead and saving for the future. Well, that among other things, I think, you know, look, seems to be that between miniaturization and mechanization that a lot of these labor jobs are going the way of, going the way of the old timers, you know, look. Maybe it's time we just change the type, our idea of the type of work that we need to accept, you know. But if we're going to do that, service jobs need to, on an economically based, replace.
The Tom Hartman program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
How can contemporary America possibly compare with 1933 Germany? Find out in Tom Hartman's brand new fully illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America. Through Tom's concise political analysis and Neil Cohn's vibrant illustrations, you'll observe an unsettling, if not shocking, perspective of America. You'll also hear what the founders of this country did to control corporate power. You'll be invited to consider how the American political system can be made more democratic, as well as comprehend the project for the new American century's vision for America. Here's what syndicated cartoonist Ted Rawl said after reading We the People.
An ambitious effort to explain everything that's wrong in America, how things got this way, and what should be done about it. We the People is the product of a brilliant and principled thinker.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by